final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, let's see if I can get this right. You're listening to Rant Master, King of the Soapbox, Mad Scientist, Loudmouth, Know-It-All, Shaziz here on the Mad Science Show. Woohoo! I think I got part of that right. Anyway, so if you're wanting to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html at www.shazizradio.com and you can throw your comments in there and tell me what you think and all that kind of jazz. Or you could actually just join me on Skype and join the conversation live. And so, with that said, if you want to listen in, there's many places to listen in. One of the places, the best place, People for People Radio. If you're over there on the Super Chat already, you can scroll over there and scroll down to the link for People for People Radio Network and go over there and join them. Say hi to those folks over there. And, yeah, don't forget to check out Wolf Spirit Radio. Hope I get all those in. Anyway, I want to play a few things. I'm just going to do it, you know, through the live deal there. So you might hear me sneezing or coughing or laughing in the background or something like that.
Hundreds of world leaders and climate change experts are descending on Copenhagen to try to come up with a new pact to slow global warming. And thousands of protesters across Europe today were trying to send them a message. It's time to stop talking and make a deal. But reaching that deal has now been complicated by what's being called ClimateGate, a string of hacked private emails between global climate change scientists in the U.S. and Europe, which have cast doubts on the very science this summit is based on. The emails seem to show that some of the world's top experts decided to exclude or manipulate some research that didn't help prove global warming exists. 1998 was the hottest year since record-keeping began, but the temperature went down the next year, and it's only spiked a couple of times since. An email from 1999 shows scientists worked hard to demonstrate an upward trend. They talk of using a trick to hide the decline in global temperatures. It worked like this. When temperature readings gathered from studying tree rings showed what looked like a decline in temperatures from the 1980s to the present, the scientists added in measurements taken later by more modern instruments, which gave them the answer they wanted. The scientists say the emails are being misinterpreted.
A lot of charges have been made that I think are quite unjustified, cherry-picking information and not taking it quite out of context and misrepresenting what it's actually saying.
Senator James Inhofe, a climate change skeptic, says the emails prove the global warming threat is exaggerated. He wants a congressional investigation.
We're relying upon that science for a bunch of stuff that we would be doing that would lose a lot of jobs and really affect Americans. But I do believe that an investigation would show that they have clearly manipulated the data.
The official U.S. position hasn't changed, that climate change is real and needs to be addressed.
Climate change is happening. I don't think that's anything that is, quite frankly, among most people in dispute anymore.
Two major carbon producers, India and China, agree. They just announced they'll set goals to lower their carbon emissions. Though the U.S. Congress hasn't agreed on an American plan to lower emissions, President Obama's visit to Copenhagen at the end of the meeting instead of the beginning, as originally planned, is being taken as a positive sign.
President Obama said he will come to Copenhagen if a deal is feasible. And I have always said, and we have in the United Nations said, that while nothing is guaranteed, the world is ready for a deal.
But the leaked memos have given ammunition to critics of climate change, so climate change supporters fear Copenhagen may only produce the framework for an agreement that then will be passed on to next year. Jeff?
All right, Kimberly Dozier from our Washington Bureau tonight. Kimberly, thank you.
So, there's one right there. I'm going to do another one. Hopefully I don't get that doggone commercial. I don't know if anybody's noticed this, but...
Russia's deadly wildfires, the smog-filled cities and poor harvest are being seen by some environmentalists as signs of climate change. Let's now cross live to London to discuss this with Piers Corbyn. He's an astrophysicist and also founder of Weather Action. Good to have you. Thanks very much indeed for joining us live there in London. So what we are seeing here is a drastic change in climate, aren't we?
Well, climate has always been changing, but this has nothing to do with man. In fact, we predicted that there would be extreme heat in East Europe and Russia this summer. And it's caused by a certain circulation pattern. CO2 does not cause circulation patterns. What causes those is a combination of solar activity and the state of the phases of the moon.
But hang on, Piers, excuse me, just a minute. You say this isn't caused by man. How come they're reporting this heat wave is recognised as the worst in 1,000 years of recorded history in Russia? Man has got something to do with this, hasn't he?
No, nothing to do with it. The only connection is man is here at the same time as the sun and the moon are doing things. You see, a very similar situation happened about 132 years ago, where there was the same sun, earth, lunar, magnetic states. There was heat waves in Russia, and there were also floods in Pakistan, as now. And in the previous few years, there was also floods in the English summers, also 132 years ago. So these things are dictated by solar activity in the moon. They're nothing to do with mankind, and those who say that are just trying to make money.
But are we not going to see this? Are we not going to see this again next year, the year on? I mean, it's only it's quite recent.
That's a very interesting question. These things do come in bursts, and we're working on that very question, those forecasts. We did say there would be a series of wet summers in England, for example, which we've had. Now, will there be a series of these very hot summers in Russia? We don't know. We have to work on that. But I assure you, it's nothing to do with carbon dioxide. And if you stop driving around Moscow, it won't affect next summer one jot.
Well, how come then so many climate change scientists disagree with you and they get so much support for what they say?
They're on a gravy train, for heaven's sake. There's trillions of pounds traded every year on carbon trading and doing silly things like building windmills, which will achieve nothing. I mean, there's money in it, and that has corrupted science.
But also, I'm sitting here in Moscow, and I think the longer I spend outside, I'm going to get carbon monoxide poisoning. That's a result of all the cars.
Wait a minute. No. The carbon monoxide is coming from the peat being improperly burnt. But you see, set against this warmth, you had a very cold winter in Russia, coldest for a very long time, and right now we've got record low temperatures in the southern hemisphere, which the world state media are avoiding reporting. The average temperatures of the world are actually declining. The significant thing about the world now is not the heat in the north, although it's very significant for you, or the cold in the south so much. It's the contrast. We've got massive contrast around the world, and these are controlled by solar lunar effects.
But a lot of people, though, and Russia has an interest in the Arctic, of course. The Arctic is opening up. That's surely because of reduction in temperatures, and that's going to be perhaps exploited.
Temperatures change, but they're not caused by CO2. Actually, ice is starting to increase again in the Arctic, and it has been increasing for a long time in the Antarctic. Again, it's nothing to do with CO2. Those who say that have no evidence for it. There's only evidence against.
Can I quickly ask you
a gravy train?
Okay, can I quickly ask you before we finish? Does a very hot summer necessarily lead to a very cold winter? Can we expect a very harsh winter here in Russia?
Well, we don't know. We're working on that. They often do come in pairs like that. That is true, but not all the time, and then there are going to be changes in patterns. So again, we have to forecast that using our long-range process of using sun, solar magnetic and lunar effects, and we can predict things many months ahead, and we have been very successful in doing so.
Piers Corbyn, as always, it's always very interesting to hear what you have to say. Thanks very much for joining us here live on RTV, RT there in London, founder of Weather Action. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
So, there's a whole lot of stuff, controversial stuff being talked about on global warming / climate change / climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up. But I got a couple more things that I want to play. But before all that, see, I titled this Global Warming Gives Me a Headache. And ironically enough, I just about died laughing when I saw this, that when I Googled up Global Warming Gives Me a Headache, and it says, on the first link on there, it says, can climate change cause migraines? Sufferers feel severe weather changes or whatever. It's not only global warming that causes headaches, so does lightning or whatever. The other deal down there says global warming is causing more migraines. Man, I tell you what, they will say anything about climate change. Climate change gave me a toothache or whatever. I'm saying whatever a lot. Let me push this one over here real quick. Hopefully I don't get bombed with a commercial.
This is a Fox News alert. 2017's devastating hurricane season continues. Unfortunately, another storm called Hurricane Maria barreling toward Puerto Rico at this hour. The storm is already a Category 5. It's still gaining strength. It's expected to approach the island of Puerto Rico by Wednesday morning. It could add to the devastation already caused by Hurricane Irma. Obviously, we'll be tracking it and bringing you the latest. Well, with so many deadly storms in the past 2 months, it's not surprising. Many have sought to make a political point or draw a connection between them. Many are saying, Facebook is full of this, that the storms are proof of global warming, never mind their lectures that weather is not climate when it's cold or snowy. John Stossel just wrote a column calling these people alarmists. That was, he's being now denounced as a denier. He joins us tonight to explain. So, John, you're seeing this everywhere, everywhere. We have bad hurricanes, unprecedented hurricane season because of climate change. Is that true?
No, even the government, NOAA, says we don't have information to prove that. It's premature to conclude that they've had a detectable effect. And yet, the media is just filled with this. And they don't just say, this proves climate change is real. I mean, of course climate change is real. Climate changes. They say man-made climate change is real. And we don't know how much man did. But they just say it.
But doesn't that, I mean, wait a second. If you ask questions, critical questions, and ask for data in order to come to conclusions, that makes you, I think, a denier, right?
Well, I think because I work at Fox, everything makes me a denier. But and I am a denier of part of it. But climate change is really four things. Is the climate changing? Yes.
Yes.
Does man play a part? I would say probably. Maybe a small part. Is it going to be a crisis? It might be. It's possible. But the most important one, four, is anything we do now going to make any significant difference? And there, no, I am a denier because we're just wasting money and hurting poor people doing the stuff we did under President Obama and before him.
But, I mean, the argument is that to act is a moral imperative and that it's immoral not to act. You don't buy that.
It's immoral to act if it isn't going to make much difference, if it makes it harder for poor people to live. If it raises the price of energy, that really hurts people. It might be a moral imperative to act on malaria or dysentery,
right,
real problems we have now, but we don't know about climate change. And buying all the Priuses, if everybody followed the Paris Agreement, which they wouldn't have, even the proponents admit it would only make the slightest difference.
Why is it that the debate about science has so many moral overtones?
It's the new religion of the left. Man pollutes. Man's carbon, greedy industries. This has to hurt people. We have to fight this. This is their religion.
Can you think of any other species of science where asking questions is considered wrong?
No. Asking questions is good. There are no dumb questions.
Right. And isn't skepticism the essence of the scientific method?
Yes. Though they say, well, it's beyond that now. Everybody agrees. But they don't agree that it's a crisis or that we can do anything about it. As a consumer reporter, I have covered so many of these scares.
Right.
Pesticides are causing the cancer epidemic. Y2K is going to make all the planes crash endlessly. They don't happen.
So can you think, medicine obviously is another branch of science. What would happen if you applied these same rules to medical research? That we know what we know, and anyone who asks questions or evidences skepticism is immoral and ought to be punished. What kind of medicines do you think we'd develop?
Progress would stop. But remember, the researchers have an incentive to say, this is a crisis, and if we do this, it'll make it better, because then they get money. If they say, we don't know, or it might not make a difference, they don't get money.
Well, this is incredibly complicated, and we see part of the picture, but not the whole picture, because that's the way life is. Bottom line, you are saying there is no consensus that climate change is responsible for more powerful hurricanes.
That's what I'm not the scientist who could make that decision, but NOAA says it.
Right. Interesting. John Cecil, thank you very much for that.
Thanks, Tucker.
Good luck with the aftermath, the blowback.
All right, one more. Before I push this last one here, if you happen to get out there on YouTube, since all this fake news thing been going on, YouTube has took it upon themselves to attach what they claim to be credible evidence to any video that they might disagree with. And so on that particular video, or this particular video, because it basically the title of it says, hold on, let me find it, where to go. Gore gets slammed over false global warming predictions, and right underneath the video they attached a Wikipedia link. And ironically enough, if you're going to talk about fake news and bias and all that kind of jazz, that people are going to say what they want to say and you disagree with them, Wikipedia is probably the last one that you'd want to use as a proof of somebody who knows what they're talking about. Now, don't get me wrong, there's probably good information on Wikipedia, but Wikipedia definitely does have a bias. Go try to write a controversial article on there and even provide all the links necessary to state your argument. If they disagree with it, they will delete it. That's just the way that they work. So that's probably one of the worst examples of so-called evidence, but they linked it to a global warming article that's actually on Wikipedia. I'll probably copy that link and post it into it, even though I disagree with it. But nonetheless, they use Wikipedia as a a reputable a reputable source to give people information that what they're watching in the video is probably wrong or whatever. And so that's what we're up against out there, and that's one of the reasons why global warming gives me a headache, because regardless of all the scientists that say that that's not what's going on, and all the twisting of terminology, because if you say global warming, climate change, climate disruption, global warming didn't work out so well because there were places where they were shoveling 20 inches or more of snow off the ground while they're talking about the planet heating up. Well, that just kind of laughs in the face of global warming. If the planet ain't heating up, if you're freezing and the ice is getting thicker, then, that's kind of hard to say global warming. Now, climate change is kind of hard to argue with because, the climate changes all the time. In some areas, if you don't like the weather, wait 20 minutes or so and it'll change. You get crazy weather all the time. And, there's certain places out there, it could be perfectly sunny, and then just in a matter of minutes, a cloud rolls in and dumps a whole bunch of water, and bam, the sun's out again. So, you go from thunderstorm to perfectly sunny day. So, yeah, climate change is one that's hard to argue with. But the problem is, it's the way that you're arguing about it and the way that it's being portrayed, climate change. It sounds all, the world, we're all going to be doomed, there's going to be bigger storms and all this kind of jazz, when it doesn't play out the way that they said it. Well, it must have been something else. And then that, and what I mentioned earlier about global warming giving me a headache, they're actually blaming global warming for migraines. So it says severe headaches associated with higher temperatures. Well, that's possible. If you overheat, you can get a headache. Global warming is causing more migraines. That's a Neurologica blog or whatever you call it. And it's not only global warming that causes headaches, so does lightning. Oh, I think I already read that one. Well, yeah, you get a definite headache and get struck by lightning. Anyway, so I'm going to go ahead and play this one over here. Hopefully I don't get socked with a doggone commercial on there. It drives me insane.
Got that? 75% chance. Complete environmental chaos. That's what former Vice President Al Gore predicted back in his movie in 2006. It didn't happen. There he said back in 2009, 75% chance, Arctic ice gone within the next 5 years, 7 years. 8 years later, Arctic's still here. Let's look at fossil fuel stocks like Exxon and Chevron. They're closing the day higher. We got greedy stocks Tesla and First Solar closing the day higher as well. Let's bring in the author of The Skeptical Environmentalist. He is Bjorn Lomborg. Why didn't Al Gore's predictions come true? Good to see you.
I'm going to pause that for a second, because since it talked about the fossil fuel industry out there, I wanted to point something out. A lot of people will say, well, you support the fossil fuel industry, that's why you're a climate change denier, you don't believe in global warming or whatever. That's a big hockahooey when it comes to me personally, because I don't support the so-called fossil fuels, and fossil fuels in itself is a big misnomer. But nonetheless, we'll get to that sooner or later. The whole thing is, I know that we have super fuels available to us that we could actually be using and re-engineering machinery to run more efficiently. And so, you know, what I'm talking about and the basic science of it all is that, you know, if you're going to sit there and claim this to be science using the scientific observation and all that kind of jazz and then turn around and say something's happening and it ain't happening according to science when the science completely and utterly destroys what you're trying to say, if you're flat out lying to people, well, yeah, I'm going to get mad. I'm going to say something about it. That's what mad scientists is all about. But as far as supporting the fuel industry, the fossil fuels or whatever, no, that's not even remotely the case in my case because, I think that we could engineer machines that even if they were running on gasoline or diesel or whatever, any type of what they call fossil fuels, that we could make these things run so clean and efficient that you wouldn't even be getting any kind of, how you doing there?
Good morning.
All right, so let me finish what I was saying. So, if you was to engineer everything out there, all your machinery, you could get these things to run so clean and efficient that even fossil fuels wouldn't even make a difference out there. But nonetheless, you know, now that Ted showed up, I'm just not going to play the rest of that podcast. I'm just going to go ahead and go because everybody knows Al Gore said a lot of crazy stuff that never come to pass. And, the science, I told him a long time ago, I said the science is going to prove it out. You just have to wait a little bit of time and you'll see it's not going to represent what they've been claiming all the time. And, of course, there was also said at one point, there's going to be, some crazy weather because of, real science, what's going on in the world, how things actually work, what nature actually does. But, nonetheless, here we are, year 2018, the climate change debate is coming again, alive again, and, of course, some people, like I said, are saying that climate change causes migraines. Well, I can sort of agree with that, but it all depends on how you're actually stating your case. It gives me a headache because I know that in the realm of science, that we have every tool and every bit of technology necessary to quite literally design the perfect machines. And yet we don't do this, and for whatever purpose, of course, this is the purpose that I see. If you want to sell fuel, you obviously don't want people looking into hydrogen technology. If you want to sell electricity, you don't want people looking into alternative energy technology. So there's a big deal going on behind the scenes, lobbyists trying to say, oh, well, look, these windmills are chopping up the birds. And or they're making the environment look ugly or whatever. So on one hand, the climate change people and all them are talking about how we got to reduce our carbon footprint, but on the other hand, they're hypocritical because they won't, allow people to freely put up alternative energy designs, not to mention the trolls that goes on into the alternative energy community itself and all the craziness that you have to contend with to try to get something out there on the market. Guys like Stan Myers and John Bedini and Joseph Newman and even all the way back to Tesla, was showing people different ways to use energy and, in the process of trying to debunk it, people will come out there and they'll start quoting the so-called laws of thermodynamics and make a complete and utter fool out of themselves because they don't understand what the laws of thermodynamics even is or what the purpose was for to begin with. But we'll get to that at some point. The thing is, climate change or global warming or climate disruption or whatever's going to be next week when the math doesn't add up, it quite literally does give me a headache. And I thought it was kind of funny whenever I Googled it up that global warming gives me a headache and doggone it, that's what people's out there claiming. Yeah, global warming's giving everybody migraines. That's a real hoot, man. Alright, there's a lot of things going to give you a migraine in this world, but global warming / climate change / climate disruption ain't going to be one of them unless you have to sit around and listen to all the rhetoric of people talking about science that they have no kind of clue about. and even individuals that have learned all the talking points, and they can debate somebody with all the talking points, but they can't debate nobody critically with real basic science or real basic physics to quite literally understand that CO2 is heavier than oxygen. Carbon monoxide, which is one oxygen atom connected to another carbon atom, one carbon atom, so the CO2 has two oxygen atoms connected to one carbon atom. The carbon monoxide has one oxygen atom connected to one carbon atom. I might even be saying that wrong, molecule, whatever. Nonetheless, I don't care. It's upset it so long ad nauseum that it gives me a migraine, even trying to explain people that it's heavier than oxygen. So it doesn't rise, it falls. If oxygen can't defy the known laws of physics, which they claim is gravity, then how is it that CO2 can magically get up there where oxygen cannot? And then they go into, well, it's in the parts per million, stupid. Oh, really? What about the parts per billions when a doggone volcano erupts, and the science has shown that every time a volcano erupts, we go through a cooling period? Never mind. If it's heavier than oxygen and it's magically making up there, there's something else going on. But that's the way it goes in modern day science. Science hasn't been science for many years. It's turned into some sort of weird hoodoo voodoo religion, where now that guys like Al Gore become God because he gets his book Earth in Balance. Look, I like saving the planet, but you got to have some common sense when you're talking about saving the planet. For one, if you're going to protest save the trees, don't be standing out there with a wooden stick and a paper sign, because it makes you look ridiculous. Anyway, so hi, Ted. How you doing, brother?
1 second, I got a neighbor stopping by here. Give me 2 seconds, is it?
All right, well, have your neighbor join in. Anyway, so there we go. And, I've been at this for quite some time. I started yelling about global warming back whenever I was about 9 years old, when they first started all the ridiculousness. And it's basically just a way to make money. And if you really cared about your so-called carbon footprint, and you're sitting there trying to discourage people from alternative energy research, then that ought to be a red flag to people with common sense. If you got any kind of common sense and a little bit of education under your belt, and you're just following the status quo of what the mainstream tells you, I don't believe nothing unless I actually research it myself. And even whenever I'm reading a science book back in the old days, I'm still skeptical and I'm still questioning what is actually going on here. All right, this is what science says is happening, but isn't the case that you're trying to learn and you're trying to progress as far as humanity's technology and knowledge and stuff? So if you're looking at something that's read in the science book, like an old theory or something, everything in science these days is theoretical. But if you read the standard theoretical science, and then you find something that doesn't jive with that, and then you put it on the table to be peer reviewed, well, if people are under some sort of illusion that science is their religion, then they're going to discredit you and argue with you and do everything so that they can keep their good name. Now, science guys out there that want to keep their funding will go along with the climate change debacle. But if you're a science guy out there and you honestly believe that global warming, climate change, or climate disruption is real, and there are science and technologies available to quite literally change the way that we use energy, then I would think that they would be on board. I would think that they would want to go out there in the alternative energy community and grab up all the brilliant minds that's out there doing research in alternative energy and say, look, I don't necessarily agree with your method or your type of science that you're doing right there, but I do like something about what you're doing, and we can add to that to make it better. All of us together, we can troubleshoot and find solutions to everything. But that's not the way it goes down. They'll throw a label on you and call you a pseudoscientist and such or whatever. And the real pseudoscientists are the ones out there claiming that it's global warming, because they don't have no concept of basic science, the basic principles of physics and so-called gravity and everything. If something is heavier than oxygen, and if 10,000 feet is the highest that you can go without supplemental oxygen, and then at 14,000 feet you got to start pressurizing the cabin of the airplane so that you can have some oxygen in there, because it's so thin up there you can't breathe, and the human has to have so much oxygen, and if you got multiple humans in the same vehicle, well, you got to be able to regulate that, and you got to be able to regulate the exhaling CO2 from their lungs as they're, you know, breathing in and out. So you got to keep the air clean, and you got to keep the cabin pressurized, and you got to keep enough oxygen in there for them to be able to breathe. So there's science involved in it. Why would you have to do all that if somehow or another CO2 just magically got all the way up there? See, folks, they missed the basics of the whole deal. CO2 is heavier than oxygen, so it displaces oxygen. So if there was enough CO2 from your feet all the way up, or from the exhaust pipe all the way up to where they're saying that it getting into the atmosphere and causing it to trap in heat, well, then we'd all be dead already. We'd all suffocated a long time ago. And the fact that cars don't release CO2, they release carbon monoxide. And so carbon monoxide is even more dangerous, because it has two factors that's going to give you a problem. One is the molecule small enough to fit down into your respiratory system and basically give you carbon poisoning. So you don't only suffocate with CO or carbon monoxide, but you will get poisoned by the carbon, too much carbon in your bloodstream. You know, they miss all that kind of stuff. But if there was enough carbon monoxide to go from that muffler all the way up to where they're saying it's getting trapped into the atmosphere, once again, everybody would be dead already. That's basic science, common sense, but that gets overlooked. But once again, we're back down into the parts per million. It's a little tiny fraction up there, and it's getting too much up there, so it's trapping in the heat from the sun and causing the planet to heat up. Never mind the fact that you're shoveling 20 inches of snow off your driveway during the winter time. That's not part of the equation there. And that's why it went from global warming to climate change / climate disruption, or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up again. So that's where we're at. That's why global warming gives me a headache. And it has been giving me a headache since I was 9 years old. And if you want to resolve this, then why aren't you paying attention to technologies that have been readily available that could take and basically make the internal combustion engine not obsolete, but re-engineered to the extent that you have no losses in the system and you're not polluting outside the deal. See, here's the thing. When you're running an internal combustion engine and you don't understand that the harder you run that engine, the less efficient it's going to become, because you're not getting a complete burn on the combustion portion of it. So now you're going to be either putting soot out into the air, or you're going to the car's going to stink when you're running it. You're not burning the fuel. You're not getting a complete burn. You don't have enough time to get a complete burn. And so in the process of this, they try to cram more fuel down through the injection system and try to pump in more oxygen from outside in order to get that complete burn. See, by the right standards, you should be using less fuel. The harder you mash on the gas pedal, the less fuel that you should use. Now, anybody with any doggone common sense could understand that, because those pistons are going up and down faster, the exhaust valves and the intake valves are opening and closing faster, and you have less time in order to burn that fuel efficiently. So you should be pre-planning ahead of time, and by breaking that fuel down into a smaller portion, then you'd be able to get a more complete burn And the faster you go, the less fuel you should use. But that's not the way that the standard internal combustion engines are engineered these days. And that's why they run the way that they do. That's why your gas mileage is crazy. So with all that, Ted, you back?
I'm back, brother. I'm back, Shaziz. I'm back.
I titled this one here, Global Warming Giving Me a Headache, but, you know, it's kind of like back up in the debate section again. But it really aggravates me because guys like Stan Myers back in 1979 were actually driving around dune buggies using, hydrogen technology. Now, water is a super fuel. If you understand how to use water, it's a super fuel, and it burns clean. So what in your mind would think would be the reason why guys like Stan Myers would get shut down before they ever even got their technology to market?
Well, Stan Myers, I think, was, I appreciate Stan Myers. I've watched almost every one of his lectures I can get up. And you know what it all boils down to is right when he says it. Well, we don't want the Arabs getting a hold of this. You know, if the Arabs get a hold of this, we're going to be, oh my God, the Arabs are going to get a hold of this. I cannot do that. I've got to go to the government and the military because we can't have the Arabs getting a hold of this. This is in the 70s, for God's sakes. And it's like, okay, well, that's why it didn't work. I mean, if you wanted to, I understand that, but like, you got like fear in your heart. You know, you're worried about you don't want to give it away for all the wrong reasons. I think when your whole concept comes from that kind of fear, then they can take that out from.
That's the first time I ever even heard that. I hope you can send me a link to that particular deal because.
Oh yeah. I can get it for you because he speaks on the oil embargo a lot, or like the 70s embargo where they had to. I wasn't around in the 70s, but I understand that like there was a shortage on gas. You had to go to the pumps and you had to get numbers sometimes, what days you could fill up and stuff like that. And it really affected him. And that's the reason why he made the machine, was because he didn't want, this is in that lecture, he was like, you know, the oil embargo, he's like, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. He's like, America is a great country, blah, blah, blah. And then he says that the reason he didn't, like, share more of it is that he didn't want the Arabs to get a hold of it before the Easterners got it, because he's like, you know, if the Arabs had this, the world would end, basically, is what he was saying, which I understand the theory.
If that's the case, I don't agree with his thinking on that, because, you know, they're trying to sell oil over there. And suddenly they have hydrogen technology. They would want to suppress that bigger than you know what, because they got a lot of oil that they want to sell. That's their main bread and butter. So I wouldn't worry about the Arabs. I'm more worried about the industry over here buying oil from them, who in turn want to, because they invested in that oil, not want this technology available. However, even if they did get a hold of it, the technology is already out of the bag, and so all it would take at that point is for our scientists to start paying attention to real science, and we could reverse engineer any piece of equipment that they made. And so we would all have it right now. So it probably would have benefited Stan Myers back in them days if they did get a hold of it. You see what I'm saying?
Whoa. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's an old saying like, oh, never do business with an Arab, or never do business with an Indian, or never do business with a white person, or never do business with anyone. Because look, you know, he didn't want to do business with the Arabs. Look what he did. He goes and gets in business with the Eastern Europeans. And then look what happens. He's at a meeting with Eastern Europeans, and he ends up, if they poison me, I'm dead in the parking lot. It's like, well, you really thought that the Eastern Europeans were a bunch more trustworthy than the Arabs? Or so? I just don't get that. I just love everyone equally. Well, I know there's evil in every sector. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. But see, here's the thing. You know, the mainstream media out there, they have developed such a mistrust with the people. Nobody believes nothing they say anyway. But there are enough people out there who listen to them when it comes to things like, global warming and climate change or whatever, all that jazz, and they don't listen to about technologies. Like, one of the things that really made me mad was I used to be a fan of the Mythbusters, all right, until they did their hydrogen deal. when they did their hydrogen deal, and to show why it is that we don't use hydrogen technology, well, they put hydrogen, straight hydrogen, down a carburetor without no flashback arrestor, and got an explosion and an implosion at the same time, an implosion from hydrogen, but nonetheless. They said, well, that's probably why we don't use hydrogen technology, and basically made it look as if hydrogen was dangerous. It is dangerous if it's used improperly, but if you're using it properly, yeah, it is not dangerous. It's a controlled deal, but they got a lot of people that follow the Mythbusters, that look up to them, like, because they're really good with science and stuff like that. Well, if you get people like that, thousands of viewers that, respect and trust the Mythbusters, then suddenly, hydrogen technology just took a back seat to real science. And that's a shame, And so I despise the Mythbusters now. I won't watch their show anymore because of that one particular episode. Because the truth is, if they really understood how hydrogen technology works, they would never have shot that down an open carburetor like they did. They would done it properly.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the Mythbusters the ones that couldn't build Bedini's schoolgirl motor?
Well, sure. They're always debunking anything alternative energy.
I don't really mean that in an offensive way. I mean, Bedini called it a schoolgirl motor because the girl in the school made the motor. So, I mean, like, it is as easy as a schoolgirl can make. Like, the MIT scientist on, whatever they invited to, because I guess they couldn't do it themselves, so they invited MIT scientists.
Yeah.
And they couldn't figure out how to hook it up.
And that's another thing, too. There's a lot of people out there who aren't getting the results that they want out of running these Bedini motors. That's because they don't understand what he was trying to say, what he was trying to show them. There's different ways to use energy. Like when I talk about my plasma technology, and it's not actually my plasma technology, because the technology's been around since the late 1800s. It was called a mercury arc rectifier. And it's when they had to figure out how to change Tesla's high voltage AC and rectify it into high voltage DC so that they could run Edison's elevator motors and stuff that were already an infrastructure already set up. They needed to be able to use, some way to change that AC wave into a DC wave so they could run them the motors. Well, so they built the mercury arc rectifier, which essentially was a glass tube that had a little ball of mercury in the bottom of it and some anodes and cathodes. And when they shot the high voltage AC in one side, it superheated the mercury, turning it into a vapor, and then basically took that vapor and energized it into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. Now that you got this energy coming in, it has to have somewhere to go, and so it goes out the other side of the mercury arc rectifier in the form of DC current, because it's pressurized inside that tube and the energy can't flow back the other direction, therefore now it's rectified. Does that make sense to you? You still there?
Yes.
Well,
yes, I am.
That's what they did. It was essentially a diode. All right, just like the same principle that the rectifier tubes in old vacuum radios and TVs were, But that particular technology didn't have to stop there, because if they would have used that particular technology, we wouldn't be talking about nuclear reactors or, nuclear industry, because that same technology, where you're quite literally producing plasma, is capable of transferring that heat energy into, any other medium that you want. So you can change that energy from what would have been either high voltage AC or pulsed high voltage DC or whatever, to send that in there at a certain frequency range and energize any noble gas into plasma. And if something ever went wrong, basically, let's say it got hot enough to melt a hole through glass, which I've seen it do because plasma is really hot, well, then that would just basically bust the tube and the process would stop. You wouldn't have a radioactive release of you know, highly radioactive material or anything like that. The process would just quite literally stop. And so it would be a perfect way to do the same thing that a nuclear reactor does in a whole safer manner, because none of the noble gases, unless you're, you know, filling an entire room up with them, and it doesn't take that much gas to actually generate the plasma. And so we could have, using the old mercury rectifier, designed reactors that would heat water, boil it, superheat it into steam, and get the same amount of work and electricity out of it that we did before. But, you know, there's people out there that will say high voltage isn't good for anything. Well, if you actually look at how energy works, every time you use any form of energy, there is a byproduct, and that's heat. You will generate heat from friction or whatever. And so, knowing that heat is the most prevalent problem that we have in all of our machinery, then you should be able to use your critical mind to figure out ways to turn that negative into a plus. Now you got all this extra power available. What can you do with it? You see what I mean?
Yes.
So that's where I'm at on the whole process. But these folks out there that keep on hollering about climate change and climate disruption, you could actually take CO2 and energize that into plasma. You know, and CO2, there's so many different ways that you could use it, because it actually has carbon. You know, you need certain things in order to start a fire. Do you know what those three things are that you need to start a fire?
Nitrogen, oxygen, hydrogen, water, oxygen.
Well, to put it simple, you need a fuel source, an ignition source, and oxygen. Those are the three things you need to start a fire with. Now think about CO2. What do you got when you got CO2?
Carbon.
Yeah.
Oxygen.
Where would carbon fall in that category?
A fuel source.
Uh-huh. And where would oxygen fall in that category?
It's like catalyst or whatever, oxidizer.
Well, yeah. Well, see, now you got the oxygen necessary for a fire. You got the fuel source necessary for a fire. Now all you need is an ignition source.
Right.
All right. Well, diesel engines, they only use a they'll use a glow plug long enough to get those cylinders up to operating temperature. And so if you got the cylinder up to operating temperature, you get what's called compression ignition. When that compression comes up there, it generates so much heat that it actually causes things to ignite. So instead of actually having to have a spark, you got the heat actually igniting the fuel. You see what I mean?
Yes.
So we could quite literally design an internal combustion engine that would run off of soda water, CO2. That sound crazy to you?
I mean, no.
I mean, that's the science. That's the physics of the whole deal. If it has carbon connected to it, carbon is a fuel. So, I don't know why people hadn't even looked down that road. I'll tell you one thing, if you put carbonated water into your hydrogen cells, you'll get that stuff to run faster. you'll get more hydrogen out of the water.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, because the carbon is conductive. So when you put that in there, you don't even need salt.
Well, it's like I've been thinking a lot about what you're telling me about using capacitors on the transformers.
Yep.
To keep them capacitance charged instead of just trying to go right in with high voltage the whole time.
Yep.
And I think I'm understanding what you're saying finally.
Well, that's how they're able to keep those, what they call transformers, or some people call them pole pigs, that can that's on your power line pole. They keep them pressurized. It ain't no different than a rubber capacitor on your electric motor.
Huh?
Yeah, go ahead.
I said I didn't really get it until like I have these microwave parts in the step up transformer in the microwave. and the capacitor.
Yep.
And it played. Well, I didn't take it apart. My friend gave it to me. Or he took it apart. And then, so I was over at another guy's house. I'm like, can you show me how that would have been hooked up to the microwave? Because I don't really get that. And he did. And once he showed me that, I was like, oh, that's what Shazaz is talking about with the capacitor. But instead, in a microwave, instead of using the high voltage, you know, transform the back to step down, they just want that to run the magnetron.
Yeah.
But that magnetron, it'll burn up the transformer if the transformer is alone on 2,000 volts, the way I understand it. So they got to put in that capacitor in there, like grounded to the chassis. Then that capacitor is what gets filled up by the transformer, or then that transformer feeds the magnetron.
Yep,
and that's a real interesting concept, because now I'm starting to understand Don Smith's design.
That's why the modern day microwave has gone to inverter technology, because they use less energy. And so essentially you got a pulse DC circuit running a flyback transformer that's sending the same frequency wave through the magnetron. See, the old style magnetrons, basically if you look at a magnetron in a microwave, the main portion of it is quite literally a light bulb. That's it. And so what happens is you heat that element inside the magnetron up, and there's two waves that's going to happen here. First is the current that it actually takes to run the magnetron itself. So if you look at these things in the dark, they'll be like a light bulb. They'll actually light up. They'll glow. All right? And a lot of people don't see that. But when they got current rolling through them, they're a light bulb. And so when that element is heated up, then the high frequency coming from the secondary of the microwave transformer is going in there at a higher frequency, and it's knocking off electrons inside that vacuum, which are getting spun around inside there and getting trapped up in these little slots that actually cause them to speed up yet even faster, generating a microwave. And so, quite literally, out the other end of that light bulb, you have an antenna that sends a microwave out into the waveguide that sends it down into the box, and that wave bouncing around inside your little microwave oven is hitting water molecules, which a water molecule is considered a dipole molecule because it has a north and a south to it. So when that wave is going from north to south through that water molecule, it's hitting it so fast that it's rocking them back and forth, producing friction, which in turn produces heat and cooks your food. It's a really ridiculously simple concept. And so, you know, the modern day microwaves, they don't use, same type of system that the old style. They use inverter technologies to do the same exact job, which makes them more energy efficient. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting, you know what I mean, because you study much on Don Smith's design?
Don Smith, I've heard his name, but which one are you talking about?
Don Smith is the gentleman that would take the car battery to an inverter to a neon sign transformer in his own custom, like, he runs a neon sign transformer into a couple capacitors so it can capacitively control the next coil, so that neon sign doesn't have to do that much work in the end. It steps up to all that voltage, and he's got running, you know, so then he runs that into his own custom coil, which is a step-up coil, steps it up even more. Then that goes over to, like, usually like a capacitor bank that is, like, connected to a capacitor charges a giant step-down transformer for current.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
All we're doing is moving energy from one place to the next. And it's all the same energy, no matter how fast or how slow it's going. But if you want to move energy rapidly, high frequency is the way to go. And then if you understand storage, you know, then you know that if you want to get back to the point where you slow this energy back down and you build up enough that will actually generate current where you can use these inefficient appliances on demand because they require a lot of current because of the way that they were designed, Well, then you understand that storage now is a pressurized container that you could either bleed down rapidly with a sudden discharge, or you could put it out into a deal where you can actually increase the current in the windings, if you understand what I just said.
Well, one thing that really got to me a while back when we were talking was that you said that if I understood having a capacitor attached to each one of the transformers coming off my plasma generator, I'd understand how they could all be, like, stay resonant and stay tuned or whatever. And so, like, I didn't really get what you were saying, but now I kind of do. It's like, well, if you've got a transformer, and it's a certain voltage going in to step down the current, if you can supply that voltage going in through a capacitor rate of 50 to 60 hertz, it's gonna run the transformer.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that. I thought that it needed to have, I didn't think you could put a capacitor, and I didn't understand using the capacitor as a resistor, or as a different mechanism to change the electricity. That I didn't realize that if you put a capacitor in between your super high voltage and your transformer, it makes it run.
Yeah, well, they basically, and I'll have to show you, you know, offline or something, how you can take the same power source and not be able to run something, but when you put a capacitor in line with it, then you will suddenly be able to run something, like an electric fan or whatever. But
yeah,
that's because what you're doing is you're changing that frequency down. You're slowing it down. They call them smoothing capacitors, or, you know, like the ones that they actually use the capacitor for a jump start of an electric motor. Like if the electric motor is connected to a load and you go to try to start it, it ain't got enough power to kick it over the first time. But once you get it going the first time, then it'll run perfectly. Well, so they put capacitors in there, and they will charge that capacitor up so that when the moment you kick that motor on, it gives it an instant boost of power. You see what I mean? So
yes.
There's multiple reasons why you can use capacitors, not just for storage, but to jumpstart an electric motor, or to smooth out an electrical frequency to whatever you want it or need it to be to run whatever appliance you got thereafter. And that's what I've been trying to get across to all these people that keep giving me a guff about current watts and amps. Okay, once you get past a certain point, yeah, that mathematics could come into play because that's what it takes to run certain deals. But that energy is the same energy no matter what frequency range it's in. It's the same amount of energy. It's the same type of energy. It's just either moving faster or it's moving slower. And when you realize that, now you know, okay, well, if I put this dam in front of it, such as this capacitor, that energy will fill that dam up, and now I got a whole bunch of that energy in this one capacitor that I can discharge instantaneously. Now, you can use capacitors in parallel, you can use them in series or whatever, just like batteries. Capacitors work just like batteries, they're storage. They just allow energy to be discharged faster because of the way that they're designed. So they have actually made capacitor banks that they can replace an entire car battery. You know, take it from a 20-pound battery down to a 2-pound capacitor bank and be able to start an engine with. You know, and if you already have your load connected to that deal, you don't have to worry about that sudden discharge. Now you can drain it just like you would a battery. That's how a lot of these little toys work, you know. They charge these things up and then they'll run on a supercapacitor inside these little toys because they're using them just like batteries. Because they understand that a sudden discharge will drain that thing instantly. They can charge and discharge so rapidly that, you know, they can be dangerous. Like an 800 microfarad capacitor will blow your thumb right off your hand if you don't understand what its potential is and you're not careful with it. But that same capacitor already hooked to a load can be charged on demand and used on demand just like a battery. But they're powerful. That's the whole point. And that's how the power company figured out that if they hook, if they can send this energy out into a high frequency wave down the power line, they can not only get it out further to more customers, but then in turn be able to step it back down using capacitor technology and transformer technology combined together and be able to make it where it's safe to use in your house. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to use it. It'd burn your house down the moment you turn your light on. You'd get hit in the face with a lightning bolt. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it would do you a service to look up the Don Smith device and some of his lectures, because it wasn't until you finally told me that, and then I talked to another buddy of mine, that I really understand, you know, having the capacitance run a transformer. Because, like, I'm having some problems running a transformer, just like, you know, regular stepping down on so many volts, so many volts, but I would think this capacitor is going to be a big difference.
Yeah, if you took your average, let's say you just got a little transformer, something you can fit in your hand. Go out and get you some PVC plumbing, right? And build you some homemade capacitors, and basically build you a home version style transformer. There's a couple videos out there that shows you how to build a homemade transformer. Alright, using the same technique like the power company would do. PVC plumbing, like, with some end caps. Yeah.
Like a pole transformer?
Yeah, just like it would be like a miniaturized version of a pole transformer. You can send high frequency, high voltage down into that capacitor, charge that capacitor, even static electricity. If you can produce enough static electricity, capacitors will charge rapidly with static electricity. Sometimes even better than just regular high frequency. But nonetheless, if you don't believe what I'm saying, get you a Van de Graaff generator or even a Wimshurst generator and use it to charge capacitors and watch how fast you can get that capacitor to charge and how dangerous it can become when you try to discharge that thing, because it'll charge rapidly because of the way the energy is actually flowing into that capacitor. But nonetheless, if you build this little miniaturized version transformer, you'll see exactly what I'm saying, because out the other side, you'll actually have step-down usable current coming out of the other side, and then you can time it out how fast you need to put this energy in order to maintain a steady voltage on the output side that you want to run your load on. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so instead of using our generators the way that we use them right now, guys like Gerard Morin said that if you take the 2,500 watt generator, you run it into a 50 kV transformer, and then that 50 kV transformer you run down into a 25 kV transformer, as long as that 50 kV transformer never goes empty, then the next transformer line will be full, and you'll be able to run your load off of it. He was able to run things that he shouldn't have been able to run off of, like he had three space heaters and one reciprocating saw. He couldn't hook those because each one of the saws were, or each one of the heaters were at least 1,500 watts apiece. And so that's already, two of those is already past your doggone 2,500 watt maximum on that generator. But he's running a third one and a reciprocating saw off of the same generator because he understood that instead of draining that energy right off of the generator, you're running it into a storage bank, storing it and stepping down with the smaller transformer that doesn't take near the time to fill up. And once that one is filled up and the larger one, even if it only has a quarter amount of energy in it and still has three quarters left, that bottom one's still going to be full. You see what I'm saying? It's like the big bucket and the little bucket.
Can I go ahead? The guy was telling me a story one time. I was at this bar and I talked to the people about the energy, and this guy's like, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I was like, do you? He's like, yeah. He's like, I work on an oil rig. We do. They frack the hell out of this area, so they've got a lot of oil and gas. He's like, I do the electrical engineering on the oil rig. And I was like, oh, really? He's like, usually we bring in about like four of these, like, they're like tractor trailer size generators. Bring them in and set them up, and then, you know, blah blah blah, this and that. He's like, so what I did? He's like, I know your theory works, because, like, here's what I did. He's like, I ran my whole oil rig off one generator.
Yep.
And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, I just took the one generator, stepped it up to high voltage, and then used it as distribution with a bunch of earth grounds for reference among my low voltage tie-ins, step downs. And he's like, I was running the whole rig in a ring circuit off of one generator.
Yep.
And I was like, no way. He was like, I was like, did anybody on the rig realize what you were doing? He's like, no. Nobody realized what I was doing. I was just messing around. And he was like, well, he's like, then the inspector came and he was like, why ain't your light numbers, your hours on your lights haven't gone up? He's like, well, those are pigtailed into my circuit. Like, he wasn't even running his light generators. Everything was pigtailed together. And he was like, the guy was like, oh my, he just like raised his eyebrows and he left because he didn't want to look into it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so he, like, I'd never been able to get enough equipment together to try, well, how many, whatever kilowatts to run a fracking rig. Like, that's a lot of juice. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I think this theory stands, like, as more people I talk to, yeah, if you step up the high voltage, use it as distribution to your different spots for step down, especially if you put earth ground reference right there, or any kind of, I mean, you can do it with a frame or, you know, like some kind of ground reference point, and then you can get that, like you're saying, that frequency is enough to run everything, and as long as the step up is energized, your step downs are going to make you current. That makes perfect sense to me.
And if you're not dragging the load directly off the main generator, then you're not invoking Lenz effect to the extent where you're bogging that generator down. So if I got a 2,500 watt generator and let's say I have a like a Beckett oil burner igniter that only takes 300 milliamps the maximum, or 4.0 amps at 12 volts, and so I can produce 20,000 volts even only at 300 milliamps, I still got a high voltage, high frequency that I can shoot down into a capacitor and charge that thing up rapidly. You know, you can actually start fires with these doggone things. And it will actually burn through insulation of certain things because there's a lot of power available. But most folks will look at that like, well, you can't run nothing with that. Well, that's because you don't understand how energy is traveling. You can take that same energy and you can charge up huge capacitor banks with that so fast that it'd blow your doors off, and you're not understanding what's going on there. It's not standard electricity that I've been talking about all these years here on Mad Science Show. It's basically using energy differently than we have before. Sure, you can't run it on just voltage alone, but voltage is pressure according to science. And pressure means that you can move something and you get work done with something. You know, now when you talk about current watts and amps, and they say, well, you gotta have current watts and amps in order to get things done. Sure you do on the output side if you want to run what you're running, the math would apply. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you're moving energy from point A to point B, and they keep trying to muddy up the water by throwing in terminology like over zero point or over unity, and I'm trying to tell them that ain't got nothing to do with free energy.
Bro, there's only current only steps into play once something gets turned on and needs the current. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, the current is supplied. And if you want, you can, once you're running something, then you can use the math to break it down backwards.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work forwards. Resonance doesn't work like that. The math, nobody wants to do the math for resonance, because guess what? It's a big old equation. What I'm saying?
But if I take only the energy necessary to produce the waveform that I want in order to be able to move energy from one place to the next, that generator could be at idle speed and still producing more than enough energy for me to get the work done that I want. And the work done that I want is nothing more than actually changing that energy to a completely different form of energy, therefore not invoking the Lenz effect by sending electricity back through the system that I'm trying to pull power off of, and that would just move the energy. All I'm wanting to do is take that what I want off of that generator, nothing more, nothing less. That's it. And so if that generator isn't being taxed by having to try to fight itself to give you power, because you keep asking for power from the generator, and you keep adding light bulbs to it, and the more light bulbs, the more power you send back to that generator, lens effect kicks in, and now you got a second fuel that is acting as a brake on the armature, which is slowing down the armature, producing more torque that the engine has to overcome in order to produce the energy that you want. So what Bedini showed everybody was there was a way that you could take and move that energy and get it to do the work that you want it to do. And everyone tried to muddy up the waters. They didn't understand it. They said, well, this isn't over unity. This isn't zero point. And that's the whole thing. They just didn't understand what the heck he was trying to show them. What I showed them in there was how that energy quite literally took two batteries and changed one of the negatives into a positive and one of the negatives into a negative. And I was running an electrical appliance off a two negative post of a battery. How do you do that? You see what I'm saying? One of those batteries had more energy in it than the other battery, so it became positive. The other negative
in reference to itself will form a positive. One of them is going to be different unless they're exactly the same.
That's what Bedini was trying to show them. Had they had a paper.
I tell you what's a real good way to start learning about that, which helped me a lot because it was hard for me to gather and learn and see it in my mind, was the stuff by Ed Leeds-Galen, where he has that book of the experiments that you can do with magnets and batteries to start to understand the way currents travel through. See, I didn't realize that currents weren't traveling from the positive to the negative. The currents of the negative were traveling to meet the positive wherever the load was.
Well, regardless of which,
I never looked at it like that. But when you start looking at it like pushing the negative, you can push the negative to where you need it in a system. That means a lot to me. You know what I mean?
Yep. Regardless of which direction the energy is actually traveling, the basic physics and the basic science remains constant. You know, and you know, when you talk about the lens effect, you know, that is, to me, so ridiculously simple what causes the lens effect. See, I didn't just, why is it these folks can't overcome this, you know? And I looked into how this energy is, which direction it's going and all that kind of stuff, and I'm like, well, there's the problem right there. When they're trying to pull energy off of this generator, they're making a direct loop right back into the same exact generator and producing a second field that is now slowing its sucker down. And so how come they haven't got around to realizing that? That's what causes the lens effect.
It's interesting to look at all the designs where people have taken that same power and sent it to another generator or motor and have it do work for them.
Yeah. Well, it's like this. Because of how inefficient an internal combustion engine is, you should be able to quite literally, because there's a lot of wasted fuel coming out of an exhaust, you should be able to run two engines off of one gas tank. You know, the first engine in line, you would take and run the second engine with the exhaust off the first engine because it's actually blowing good fuel out the other side. So there's enough fuel in that exhaust to run the second engine in line. You see what I mean?
Right. And even with the transformer, when you have the oscillations of the, you know, the magnetic flux of the field, you know, if the transformer is designed correctly, a lot like read about the Thane-Hinds transformer, and you know, it has that extra bar and big old extra piece of metal to take all that same force, you know, the one you're not looking for, send it to a different part of the transformer, and it uses it up right there. You don't even need to, it doesn't even have like a dump load or anything. It just takes that flux and fluxes a different part of the transformer and gets it out of your way so it doesn't get, doesn't come into your line where you want the electricity going. You know what I mean?
There's a term called leakage when you're talking about transformers, where the magnetic flux actually leaks out into the atmosphere. So it's quite literally wasted energy. And there's another term called eddy currents that causes things to get hot. Well, the simple of that whole deal is, number one, if you got leakage in your transformer, you're putting too much energy to that transformer. The magnetic flux is actually expanding past the transformer. It's leaking out into the atmosphere. It's wasted energy. And since you're actually wasting energy and you got too much energy going through that transformer, now you're building a backup, which is resistance in that metal of that transformer, which is producing little currents that's causing that transformer to get hot. And so now that you understand that, you've got too much energy going to that transformer. You don't need as much energy going to the transformer to get the same amount of work done. But they do it anyway. But anyway, running that transformer that way and actually generating eddy currents, unless you got some sort of method to take the heat away from that transformer, eventually the transformer will get too hot and the insulation on the windings will reach the thermal breakdown point and they will fail and the transformer will go bad. But if you understood, first off, the leakage portion would tell you that you're using too much energy. The eddy currents would say you're using too much energy. And so in order to regulate the temperature on that transformer, you bring the power down on the input side and you're not generating near the amount of heat. And so you got a more efficient transformer because you're using it properly to begin with. But nonetheless, the power company have figured this out. They've understood this. And so now, in order to disperse some of the heat and control any breakover voltage, they actually submerge the transformer cores, the primary and the secondary, in oil to disperse that heat from that. And they use the capacitor in order to store a charge to keep it a steady voltage on the way out. So if you actually could get up there and touch one of those transformers, you would notice that it's really nice and warm because the oil is actually being warm. But if you wanted that transformer to be yet even more efficient, you could transfer some of that heat by circulating that oil in and out of that transformer and using that extra heat, which would be waste energy, to not only keep the transformer even colder, but you would be able to transform that heat into something like heating water or whatever. It's only wasted energy if you don't use it. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, I know you like thinking in detail about systems controls, and like I'm thinking, well, imagine the system controls of every transformer on a telephone pole in your town providing heat to like the road system, say in the wintertime, and melting that snow.
Well, yeah, you could do that. You could quite literally do that. You could plumb that oil right up underneath the streets, you know. And they actually have materials these days, like one of the plumbings that they use nowadays is called PEX. This stuff, you can freeze it, and it will just stretch out. It will expand, but it won't break, like the old PVC plumbing. And so it's flexible tubing that you could actually put underneath the pavement. You could circulate the heat off of those transformers down up underneath the street. And even if it snowed, that ground would stay warm enough. It would never stick to the doggone street. It wouldn't be able to because the temperature difference. But that's a free way to heat the street. It just changing the infrastructure, you know, the money cost of doing that. You see what I mean? Did I lose you?
I'm still here, Shaziz.
Oh.
Just listening.
But that's what I'm saying, though. Every one of these transformers, they're generating temperature. So that's why, you know, like during, you know, really hot days and everybody's trying to draw power from those transformers. And so that's generating more heat. And eventually, you know, several things could happen, like such as, you got all this high voltage going into the transformer. The transformer gets really super hot. The insulation begins to break down on the copper wire. The copper wire then in turn shorts out. And the moment it shorts out between all the heat and pressure going in there, your transformer blows up. That's why it's happening. And if you took the heat away from that transformer, and you kept the heat away from it, you'd keep from pressurizing that oil inside that can, and you would take that heat away and keep that transformer cool, and it would be able to handle the demand for electricity because you're able to move that heat energy away from it. See, heat is the part that is actually causing the problems in every single one of our systems out there. in your computer, the computers we're talking on. They have to have heat sinks and fans to disperse the heat as the current is actually flowing through the resistance of the transistors and resistors and diodes and stuff inside your deal. It's generating heat because it's backing up. There's too much energy going through. There's too much demand. But there's actually water-cooled systems now. You can get heat sinks that are water-cooled, and they're taking that heat energy away so that they can pull more of a demand on that particular computer and get more processing power out of it without it burning up. But in every single thing that we're having, what we classify as losses, heat is not a loss if you use it. If you take that heat energy and you use it to supplement anything. Imagine you had a system set up that while you're running your computers, it's actually circulating water through a core, and it's transferring that heat out into your room, and during the winter time, you're using that to help to heat your room. You know, when I'm running three or four computers, it'll get really warm in here. And when I'm running these monitors as well, it'll get really warm in here. I don't even need a space heater most of the time when it's cold outside because I'm dispersing that heat right out into the room. But I could even do that more efficiently if I specifically design these things to take more heat off of those transistors and such. It would actually benefit my computer because my computer transistors would remain cooler at all times while moving that energy away from that computer. You see what I mean?
Absolutely.
And that's what we got to get to if we're ever going to get past all this whole global warming / climate change ridiculousness, because the basic science of all that, it just gives me a headache. If these folks out there really seriously care about carbon footprints and the planet, then they should be listening to guys like me that are telling them it's not that we don't have enough energy, and it's not that we don't have the capability to not pollute, even with the same types of fuels. It's that our engineering skills at this point have been hindered by all the other people out there that's constantly trying to use terminology like over unity and zero point or misrepresenting free energy or whatever in order to debunk anybody who's coming online with better ideas on how to make things more efficient. We can take an internal combustion engine and we can make that thing so incredibly efficient that we could get hundreds, if not thousands, of miles per gallon. And yet, for obvious reasons, and there's where the tinfoil hat terminology comes in. They will tell you you're a tinfoil hat. Well, why would they would already be running it off of water if it was possible.
Water-free,
you see what I'm saying? It's it.
They
want to sell oil. They want to sell drugs. They want to sell ammunition, they want to sell food, and so if there's anybody got a better way to do it, more efficient, cheaper way to do it, they obviously don't want that information out there on the table. So that's why we're in the position that we're in. You got a chihuahua in the background? Anyway, that's why we're in the position that we're in. That's why global warming gives me a headache, because while you're out there talking about the world is doomed and we're all going to die or burn up, and somebody else is out here saying, well, there's a solution to all this right here, when are you going to try to use it? And it's not happening. They're not wanting to cooperate with their own people out there trying to resolve the so-called climate change issue. They'd rather just, I guess, complain about it, Ain't nothing getting done. We're here in the year 2018. Tell me what's got done. You still there, Ted? Nope. I think he stepped out. But anyway, so all these years, people have been saying we got the problem. I'm telling you, we have the answers. And not one of any of the people out there, either they didn't get my message or whatever, not one of these so-called scientists out there ever come to try to debate old crazy hair Chaziz, because they don't want none of me. I'm sitting here, I'm throwing down the gauntlet. I'm saying to the government officials out there and all of them, you know, when you want to talk about results and when you want to talk about solutions, come to the table. Let's get it done. But it's still the same old ridiculousness. We're still fighting wars over oil. We're still... Hey, your dog's a radio star. Oh, so, anyway... I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a breather and go refresh my coffee and take me a quick radio break. So I'm gonna throw on a tune or two as soon as I find something. But you're listening to Mad Science. Stay tuned, everybody. Peace and love.
crap! Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, I can describe the ruckus. The ruckus is mad science, and that's what you're listening to right now. If you happen to stumble in here by accident, stick around. We'll either make you mad or happy or something like that. Anyway, when you talk about mad science, you have to ask your question, why do I call it mad science all the time? Because back in the day, people always thought about a mad scientist as one of those folks out there in a laboratory that's doing all kinds of crazy stuff, building monsters like Frankenstein or whatever, you know, or trying to take over the world like Pinky and the Brain. No, my mad science comes from the fact that every time I look at mainstream science or what they classify as real science, and while they're calling everybody other who have other opinions pseudoscientists and such, I get mad because on one hand they're telling me that there's this global warming slash climate change slash climate disruption, and that we have all these wars over resources and gas pipelines and all that kind of stuff. And the power companies, I've seen what power companies do to the average Joe. They'll shut your power off whenever they feel like it and charge you a lot of money and a deposit to get it back on. They have no concern for the average Joe. And even to the extent where they so-called third world countries out there that people can't, in the year 2018, can't even get a clean glass of water to drink. Or they can't enjoy the luxuries that all the rest of us who are fortunate enough to be listening to this radio show right now have the luxuries of, to have lights and electricity and heating and cooling and fresh water and all that kind of stuff. See, I'm kind of like, I was born under the astrological sign Libra. You know, it's got that little symbol, the scales of justice. And I feel like if I'm this benefited where I got all these blessings, where I got the heating and cooling and electricity and luxuries that I got, why shouldn't anybody else in the world be able to enjoy the same thing? Why shouldn't everyone else in the world be able to enjoy the same thing? That's my ultimate goal. You know, the power companies out there, they're not human to the extent is what I'm saying. If you don't pay your bill, you know, everybody will say, well, you should have paid your bill, and they wouldn't have shut your electricity off. Well, there's people out there that fall on financial hard times because of the way the system's actually set up, and it makes it harder. It's really expensive to live in what they classify as the first world nations and stuff. You know, and it makes you sort of a slave to debt and to, you know, industry where you got to go out there and earn a living and basically do what the man with the money says in order so that you can get the money to pay your electric bill and your water bill and your medical bills and your food bills and all that kind of stuff. And as long as you go along to get along, you'll live pretty decent, pretty happy. And then whenever you see other things out there going on in the world that kind of touch your heart, now you got a hobby where you can go out there and try to help the homeless, or, you know, save the trees, or maybe help the poor or whatever, try to, you know, help somebody. Well, and you get frustrated because it seems like it's not happening fast enough. So look at it from my perspective. I'm looking out at the world. I see we got the solutions. People are asking for the solutions, but nobody's taking the solutions and using the solutions. I've contacted senators, congressmen, even the presidents of the United States, and I've offered them, you know, sit down at the table. I got a few things that maybe you might agree on that we could work towards fixing stuff. During the BP oil spill and during the Fukushima disaster over there, I kept trying to send messages out to people. There's a way to fix this without making a mess. But nobody would listen to a guy like me because I'm not Bill Nye the Science Guy or Neil deGrasse Tyson or whatever. I'm not one of these big famous faces that, you know, don't even understand real science and aren't even real scientists, but yet they still have the notoriety. If you hear what they have to say, most people believe them. Like they believe the Mythbusters. So yeah, I got every right in the world to be angry, mad science. Because I'm seeing what would be basic science, basic physics, just totally get ignored. And nobody is resolving the issues that we have here in the world today. Why would we need to fight over somebody's resources when the resources are so incredibly abundant and the energy is, without a doubt, 150 trillion bazillion times percent, without a doubt, proven, no ifs, ands, or buts, yet you have people that supposedly care about the world coming out trying to debunk any idea that goes against what they believe, their perception of the laws of physics and thermodynamics and basic science. The pure ridiculousness is what drives me to continue the Mad Science Show. We have every single answer to every single question necessary to resolve every single problem on this so-called planet that we live on. And yet we still have the same ridiculousness going on day after day. Now, I don't know how many times you can repeat the same doggone thing. But there's this thing out there that says if Pete and Repeat were in a boat and Pete fell out, who'd be left? How many times could you play that? You could go on for infinity. And if people keep falling out the doggone boat, maybe that ought to be a red flag that you might be doing something wrong. And so that's what I'm talking about when it comes to science. We're using energy wrong. And if we wanted to solve the so-called carbon emissions, which is the biggest hockahooey in the history of hockahooeys and has turned into a global scam of biblical proportions, and I'm not supposed to get frustrated. I paid attention in science class. And what I was taught, what I was showed later on down the line, and when I spoke out against it, suddenly I'm a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy pseudoscientist, or whatever. Or like what I said whenever I first come on to today's radio show, about being the king of, what was it? The rant king soapbox or whatever. I'm standing on a soapbox and I'm ranting and raving and raising a ruckus. And Ted, this world drives me nuts. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
We can fix it. We actually can fix it. There's so many different things, so many solutions to everything out there. If your machine's broke and you're not paying attention to there's a tooth missing in a gear, well, you're never going to get fixed. And one problem will lead to another problem, which will lead to another problem and eventually failure. But if you can look at the machine and you can recognize there's a tooth missing from it, and you can either replace that gear or repair that gear and put it back and get the machine working like it should, then it's solved. Solution? And it's fixed.
Wait.
That's all I want.
I know what you want.
You know?
See, I hear you talking. I like that you're talking. I mean, I like your systems approach.
So how do we get people to the table?
Well, we just got to be patient. and let people keep doing what they're doing, and just, I like to think that there may be a little more to this quantum thing than everybody, you know, it's easy to dismiss things because of quantum, it's easy to say things are this way because of quantum theory or whatever, but at the end of the day, I think that if we envision it, I mean, there's people that do vision boards where they will put pictures in a collage and write words that are important to them, hang it up in a spot where they see regularly and look at it every day when they walk by it. You know, there's people that practice, you know, keeping in a positive frame of mind instead of a negative frame of mind, because if nothing else, you know, you're going to have less stress effects on your body.
I'm going to try that.
So interesting to me that sour thoughts from, you know, people have been talking about sour, people being sour and sour thoughts for a long time. I don't know how long they've known, physiologically proven, that when people think certain thoughts, it causes their stomach acids to secrete and actually causes a whole acidification of the body just based on thought alone.
Well, I believe that.
Like, I want to drink certain pH water. I don't want to drink Coca-Cola. I want to have a very basic pH. I want to be somewhat basic, so because I believe that's somewhat that's more healthier than being somewhat acidic.
Yeah.
And then, okay, well, where is your thought process? Because you could be eating all the greens in the world, being as basic as you want, and all it takes is, like, people getting at you or whatever, and then all of a sudden it all drops off, and you got ulcers, and you don't know why. And it's like, so this is where the thought comes into play that maybe, just maybe, I think that it's time we can affirm and recognize that it is happening and the people are coming together. Look at the media. It is falling apart. We talk about this sometimes on the Knights of the Roundtable. I mean, this is just, it is a, I mean, I want to drop the S-bomb. It's a show out there. You know what I'm saying? It's like a real crap show out there, and it's like, you know, and on every front, not just the electrical. You can talk medical. You better not too talk. I don't talk too much about medical because I know the rules. But we can talk electrical. We can talk financial. We're even talking all this cult and stuff now. Whatever Pizzagate, all this thing's going on. It's like I know all this stuff's a reality. When does everybody else want to acknowledge it?
Yeah.
And
well,
so now that it's becoming acknowledged, it's like, wow. Like,
on the medical
wow,
portion.
That it is. Go ahead.
On the medical portion, whenever I look at any problem out there, I see it mechanically. And so the body is one incredible piece of machinery. And it has a chemistry set involved in it. And so, you know, just that understanding right there will give you all kinds of clues on how to make your body feel better. And that right there should be something that's mainstream in the industry of the medical industry, to where instead of them using adverse healing techniques, they would use, you know, straight up science in order to be able to heal people. Like, for example, that one book that I posted a link to out there, the 1 Minute Cure, where it talks about oxygen therapy. You know, and they're saying 90% of all diseases are due to oxygen depletion. So then you would track down, okay, why isn't this engine working right? You know, your air filter in your car, when it gets all dirty, it changes how much oxygen's actually getting into the through the carburetor or through the intake portion of it. And so that tells the little sensor on the other side, you need more oxygen, or you need to put less gas to it, and eventually your car will start running worse. It can compensate for a certain extent of dirt in that filter, but if you don't do anything about that, eventually the engine will be suffocated, and it won't be able to get enough oxygen, and so therefore it won't run properly, and you'll smell gas fumes out the back of the car. The same thing with the body. And so these are all common sense tactics that if the medical industry and the food and drug industry and the energy industry all come to the table, they all are dealing with the same exact problems, but ignoring the simple of all of it. Everything out there is working mechanically, chemically, or whatever. And if you can understand that, then, and then you could troubleshoot the problem, You wouldn't be out there radiating people to try to get rid of cancer. You know, on one hand they said cancer was a virus, and then the other portion of cancer is a synthetic. Like one, you would get like a fiberglass or asbestos down inside your body somehow into your lungs, and then your body natural immune system would attack it, and then it would build a knot around that would eventually get so large that it'd take on a life of its own, and now you get this mass pressing down on a vital organ, which is causing you to not have oxygen flow to that particular part of your body, and therefore causing you more health problems. The same thing in the viral, where it builds up some sort of pustule inside the body like a cyst, and that cyst continues to grow because it's not treated properly, or it actually starts to cause your genes to be mutated because it's trying to fight against it or being destroyed by, you know, whatever. And they're not understanding why this is actually happening, and so they're actually trying to kill a bad cell, a virus, or even a bacteria for that matter, while at the same exact time destroying your immune system. It makes no sense. You know, technologies were available. Raymond Rife was working on technology that would go in there and target specific certain bacteria or cells without destroying the other. All of this technology is available. But the mainstream aren't paying attention to it because the mainstream industry, the money makers at the top, they know how to make money. And if
we can start associating blame with it if you want, and like we could say that maybe let's just go to journalism. Like, okay, so all these great things have happened. We all know about this technology. Many inventors have gone through and shown it. A lot of them didn't meet necessarily negative demises. It just nothing ever happened with it. Like, look at Searle. He's sitting over there and dying in California. Some people just send him some money for his medication if you want. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so, you know, in my mind, it's like, well, let's look at this, let's look at the journalists. It's like, well, they've got the technology now that they're regrowing teeth, like using some of your own blood.
Yeah.
And like, you know, some frequency or some, you know, energy, whatever you want to call it, electromagnetic. That's how they're doing it. You can look it up, and it's like, well, I know that. There's one or two dentists in the 90-mile radius that knows they're kind of working on that.
I hope they get that mainstream.
What's that?
I hope they get that mainstream. I mean, I guess what you said earlier about patients is, I know people that we're actually getting more people on board with it. I think it's a patience thing for me. I'm impatient because I think we should be farther than we are right now.
Well, I know. And like, but let's take it to, let's, if we want to associate blame just for a minute or two, let's do it to the journalists because, well, where's all like the good consumer reports? Like, you know, popular science, all this, like, I remember reading a bunch of stuff when I was younger, and it was a little more interesting about what the future was. Well, now that we can actually do that stuff, and maybe they could have even then, we're not really seeing any real progression. And we could blame it on scientists or corporations, but if the journalists did their job and people knew about these things, now we would call that a marketer.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, the corporation needs a marketer, but that a marketer only pushes a certain idea. A journalist usually has a little bit more, you know, objective point of view. And it's like, that's why the journalist is there. They're there to keep things going. And like, if they were doing their journalistic duties, you know, reporting on the technologies instead of just hating on at the end. You say that this thing's giving you a headache, climate change.
Yep.
Well, instead of just reporting on climate change over and over and over again, they could start doing some due diligence, investigative journalism to find out who's on the cutting edge of like the ways of fixing this.
Yeah.
But you never see that on TV. So let's just go ahead right now for your sake of your sanity, and let's just say that there is no real journalism anymore.
That's
so people aren't finding out about when the steam engine was invented. Everybody knew about it. Okay, what? Look, there wasn't even they like using telegraph or whatever. It's like so. The idea is like, you know, that's what I'm saying to you is that if you want to see all your neighbors know about this, you're probably going to have to tell them, and when you're telling them, they're not really going to be as receptive as when the CNN with all the flashing lights and the neon and everything, like telling them, or it's written in the paper with all the ink and the recycled or whatever, and it's like, well, they'll, or it's on the high gloss, then it's different. You know, then that's credibility. But so there's like a catch 22, or even like a doublespeak, where the media of the media, whether it's a glossy paper or television or whatever, all this money's in that media of the media with no substance. And so if we really want to understand, so that's why we have to be patient, is because the media has no substance. And when it has no substance, that means that falls down in education.
Well, that's why OSHA's keeps running up there slapping the bee's nest. That's what I'm doing. I'm running out there smacking the bee's nest, trying to get everybody's attention. Hey, 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 I'm doing the journalist's job because I'm sitting out here trying to tell people that both sides of the facts that right there, you know, and I'm wanting them to take those solutions and run with them and help me spread the message. So I'll go up there and I'll slap the bee's nest of NASA and get all the NASA groupies on me. I'll go up there and slap the fanboys of Bill Nye and Neil deGrasse Tyson and even the mainstream news media. I'll slap that bee's nest as well. I've been stung so many times it's ridiculous. Luckily I'm not allergic to it, but I'm slapping the crap out of the bee's nest on a regular basis, just trying to wake people up to the reality that it's the average Joe that's going to make a difference. If you want free energy, it's time to start building some devices. It's time to start making your engines where they're more efficient, and the technology is available. Most folks say, well, I don't know how to do this, and I don't know how to do that. I'm sure you don't. But there's probably things that you do know how to do that the other ones that you keep looking up to don't know how to do. And together, you're going to make a good team. If I could get together with somebody who's a really good welder, I could start manufacturing things that were really cool. If I could get to somebody who was a really good electronics technician and a really good electrician and then really good a team, the dream team. If I could put together a dream team, we would have this so-called debate over free energy resolved so fast it'd make your head spin. But the problem is that we ain't got the brilliance and the talents and the machinery and the information and the resources necessary. The problem is and has always been that people are so indoctrinated and they got such huge egos that they believe themselves to know everything that there is to know, and even if it's outside of the realm of their talent, they will still argue with you till you're blue in the face that you don't know what you're talking about. But you put all these people together, put all the egos aside with all the necessary equipment to resolve things, that's how companies, corporations, NASA, and all these different manufacturers end up making a lot of money, is because they come out and find people like you. They come out and find the brilliant minds, they put together a team, and they have them build things and create things and design stuff, and then when it's all said and done, whatever they design, the company owns. They figured that out. And if there's somebody in there bucking the system and saying, no, no, we can do this better, or we should tell the world about it, well, they'll get rid of that person. You're fired. We don't need you anymore. We'll hire the next guy in line. And so these companies, they know how to keep information at bay. They know how to put things on the market at a timely manner. You don't sell the iPhone 6 until all the iPhone 5s are out of the warehouse and out into somebody's pocket. That's the way it works. So if the average Joe wants to get it on the market, if the average Joe wants to get it out to everybody, then the average Joe has to be the one to decide, I got all these talents. I'm going to go over and help this guy right here. We're going to make some really good machinery with our two skills combined. And maybe they start a business. So even in the job industry, you as a dream team in your own particular community could formulate your own companies that could compete with all these other companies, because you're making a product and you're not letting everybody in your neighborhood see this product. You're making it open source so that nobody can suppress the product. And there you go. Does that make any sense?
Dude, how many open source products do you know of?
Well, there's probably
not software. I'm not talking software. I'm not talking software. I mean hardware.
There's probably a lot out there. I mean, there's a lot of things that if you understand the patent procedure and all that kind of stuff, and how many years that a person's protected with a copyright or whatever, that you can actually
When I say open source, I mean like the company posted basically everything that they know about it. It's open source. Like, they want you to know everything about their product. They want you to know every circuit, every piece, whether it's a car, they want you to know every component. Like, most companies that I can't think of really one product that is like, was released as an open source product, except for maybe some computer things. Like, maybe there's like Strawberry Pi things or whatever, Raspberry Pis, where people make the small microprocessors. Those are pretty open source.
Well, and there's also 3D printer technology that is like open source. Like, if you want to be able to make a certain
You can like take one printer and print off another printer. It's like open source. You can print your own printer. Yeah, you're right. So 3D printers would be a good example of it. But other than that, like, really not a lot of people have, like, really come to and are doing that. Like, Tesla isn't teaching his battery technology open source as he's building it, like, on the internet or on, like, a private server that we know of, like, publicly or privately with a bunch of people. Like, I guess it would be a private server, but open to the public. Yeah. Like, they own the server, and you could come join their bulletin boards and work on the open source project anytime. I think, like, maybe they did that with the DNA coding a little bit. They did, like, some people were all working on it together kind of a thing where... But, like, that Tesla isn't doing that with their batteries to save the world. Like, nobody's really, like, trying to release all their technology as their R&D group gets it.
That's because the guys at the top want to stay rich.
Well, I understand that, she says. But, I mean, we can't really expect to see the result of something that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah,
and so like we you know, I mean, I feel frustrated too, but you know, it's like not I've let go of it a little bit because it's not out of our control to affect it where you're affecting it. That's why I got on the radio to talk about it. It's like, but it is out of our control to push our free will and just say it has to be this way overnight. I know what you know. You know, I know that it could be different. I think a lot of people listening know it could be different.
Well, you know? That's why I keep on doing it.
The way we treat each other.
That's why I keep on doing what I'm doing, is because even though I know it's not progressing as fast as I want, I know that you got to keep that forward momentum going so that people don't forget. I don't want them to forget about the Mercury Arc rectifier, and the ones that didn't even know about it, I want them to learn about it. I want them to know that back in the late 1800s, that we early 1900s, 1800s, early 1900s, that we had technology that could have, you know, surpassed what the whole nuclear power industry was using. Tesla showed us all kinds of things about how to move energy around. One of which was, you know, the waveforms and resonant frequencies and stuff like that, that you can do a lot of things that you know, science didn't think you could do before. I mean, look how they do MRIs, magnetic resonant imaging. They are actually able to look inside the body and see the inner workings of the body, you know, and that's incredible technology. And it's going to get even better down the line. But in the meantime, you still got people that can't get a fresh drink of water. And you still got people that are living under bridges, and people that can't get no food and clothing and has shelter, whatever that they need. And you still got wars over resources. And it's the average Joe that's going to be out there fighting them wars. It ain't going to be the politician. And then the politician's talking out of the side of his neck, talking about we got to combat climate change, but then won't even take your phone call when you say there's a solution to it. There's where the hypocrisy gets me upset. So, I'm saying they're trying to call up the president. Hey, well, let's have a sit down. I can tell you a few things. Maybe you can point me in the right direction or whatever. You know, I'm only one man. You're only one man. But together we make a heck of a team. It's, you know, this radio show, you know, it's important as far as I'm concerned. because we're bringing ideas and information to the table. Do you think I'm wrong?
No, he's correct.
Well, that's the whole purpose. You know, if I wanted to get famous real quick, I'd go out and do something crazy, because you can see on YouTube, if you do something ridiculous in this, your videos will go viral. But if you try to tell people, you know, the truth on any given subject, well, then it's a taboo subject and you'll get suppressed, demonetized, rejected, lower ratings, whatever. People, I don't understand it. They will watch, a dog and pony show all day long, but they are not willing to get out in the yard and clean it up, you know? So, one of these days, one of two things going to happen. Either everybody's going to be fat and lazy and stuck in a virtual reality to where they don't even know that they're in the virtual reality. They think it's real world like the Matrix. Or they're going to get wise and they're going to actually clean their physical world up and make it really nice for everybody and get along. So there's the two destinies of mankind. Because we can merge with machine. It's already been proven. We can do that. But that takes humanity out of the equation. When does it come to a point where you're no longer you, you're a machine? And the indoctrination of the years of indoctrination of the education system has basically made people reliant on things like calculators. Nobody, except for the few wise ones, can do mathematics because they never use their brain to do mathematics. They use the tool to do the mathematics. Right. Go to your average Quick Trip 7-Eleven or any convenience store out there and look at the cash registers these days. They have a picture of a hamburger on there. Guy orders a cheeseburger. Oh, look, it's a cheeseburger. Push that. And they're pushing pictures on the deal, which seems really convenient. But whenever the machine comes up with a mistake and they give you back the wrong change, they can't even figure it out. They got to call a manager. What's happened here? They're saying I didn't give them enough money back. They can't even calculate in their brain what's wrong. You see the problem here? And
yes.
That's frustrating. Because the more we become reliant on technology and the less we become, reliant on our own amazing brains and each other, then we're going to continue to go down the road. I would like to go down the road where humanity is in control of humanity's destiny as opposed to some artificial intelligence in charge of our destiny. And I know that at some point, the machinery and all the things that we talked about now are going to come to pass. They're going to have cars that quite literally run on plasma technology and water technology. It's going to happen. It's just going to be the difference of whether it happens on the people's time or whether it happens on the industry's time and who's in control of that technology from that point on. You see what I mean? That's the difference. Do you want to be in control of your destiny and have humanity benefit, or do you want corporations to continue to get larger and they be the one in control of the knowledge? So if you want to know anything, you got to go ask the man. And if the man decides he doesn't want to be truthful with you and gives you false information, then that's what you get. But if you've done your research and your due diligence and you've continuously exercised the power of your brain, then you're going to benefit. That's why right now, if doomsday actually did occur and we had some massive disaster, how many people do you think could actually garden for themselves to grow their own food? If all the stores shut down? Do you have any idea?
Do you want me to speculate on that?
Yeah.
Even if you knew how to garden for yourself, would you be able to garden? Would you be able to get enough food for the whole year because of winter? That's my question.
Well, they're in.
What percentage of people that think they could garden could make it through a winter if they have winter where they live? I know plenty of people that can garden, but can they make their whole food supply for a year and store it and can it?
Well, like, yeah.
I don't know, a lot of work in a short amount of time, hence why I've been looking for Current for a long time, is because, well, I know the first thing I'm going to do with Current, I'm going right back to my greenhouse, plug in the PEX line to a hot water heater, and start radiant floor heating my greenhouse.
There you go.
That's the first thing I'm going to do. And then the second thing I'm going to do is get a bunch of these CRAD or whatever, Cray LED, yellow warm spectrum light LED chips that are banging. I mean, they put off so much light with such little amount of electricity.
There
it's crazy.
You go. That's the
and
whole
deal. Once I get them two things in the greenhouse, I might put another layer of film over it if it's not warm enough on the 14 degree nights.
See,
and when that's done, I'll be able to sit there with the aquaponic system and raise the fish, have it circulate the fish manure into my grow beds year round.
You will be one of the people that people will seek out because you will have that knowledge in your head. That's the key. That's why industry is successful. Because they have that knowledge of how things function. They know everything that we're saying right now. They already know energy's free. They have the knowledge. And if you have the knowledge as well, I always said this saying, you can't sell a widget if everyone owns a widget. So if you put it after open source, like we mentioned earlier, and everybody has access to that information, everyone gets the benefit. Does anybody get rich off that particular information? Not unless they're, what's that word for somebody who can go out and start a business? Doggone it. Somebody who's really good going out and making money.
Entrepreneur.
Yeah. If you're a good entrepreneur, you can find a way to make money off of manure. All right? So there are people who sell manure, quite literally. And there are people who know that they can take manure and produce methane, which is another product. There are people who actually dry out manure and they use it for firewood. You see what I mean?
I collect wood chips from the wood chip companies.
Yeah.
The wood chip companies, they'll actually pay you. I let them do it for free, but they would pay you to dump their chips if it's a good enough, close enough location to where they do work. And what it really boils down to is if you have a large enough area where you can place wood chips there for 5 years, and after like the chemistry happens and the nitric acids and everything wash out of that hardwood, you've got one of the best nutrient-rich soil amendments possible.
Yeah.
Hardwood.
What I've been trying to point out to everybody and his brother, the average Joe mainly, I'm trying to get this particular message to them. Nature wastes absolutely nothing. Let that absorb in for a second. Nature never wastes anything. And if you can understand why it is and how it is that nature is able to recycle everything, including you, then you now have a model to build on to make your future industries and your future homes to be so completely, ridiculously self-contained that it would blow your doors off. If you go listen to NASA and you talk about the International Space Station and you think about logically, how is it that NASA can keep these people up there in space for so long and they all have fresh water to drink? And then you'll actually listen to the astronauts talking about drinking recycled urine. That sounds nasty as all get out. But I hate to tell you this, folks. Everyone on the planet has done that because nature has filtered everything out. Nature filters out the pee from the fish and the poo from the fish. Nature filters out everything. Nature cleans the water up. And you can help nature by learning how nature does it and repeating that and doing it on a scale where you don't pollute this water and make it take longer for nature to do something. But
people that drink their own urine.
Well, sure. But the point is this. The point is there is nothing that mankind has ever created that nature does not recycle. And so, if you understand the processes of how nature breaks down everything, then you wouldn't have dumps with trash in them. You would think that trash would now be treasure because now you have a fuel source. Now you have material source. There's all types of different plastics out there that can be incredibly recycled, and you'll get the individual out there that'll say, oh, well, it costs more money to make it than it does to dig it up. My God.
That hasn't seen anybody yet.
It just drives me insane to hear that because, you know, look at all the clothing that ends up in landfills.
That's one of the only ways to generate, I mean, true in my opinion, money. You can only generate the money of what you can sell out of the earth. That's where all the money comes from, in my theory. Now, you can speculate that all the, you know, numbers and one and zeros, interest rates and everything, yeah, but the idea is that I can dig this out of the ground and sell it to you, and that's where it begins.
Yep, that's it. You know, there's chemistry in everything, and there is nothing out there that is worthless. If you understand that if you got all these junk appliances, you don't want to throw them in the landfill, because if you throw them in the landfill, there might be chemicals involved in this that might pollute waterways and stuff like that. Well, there are industries out here who figured out they will buy your junk from you. They will grind it up, they will separate the metals, they will send them out to other industries, and they will recycle that metal, and they'll make a hefty profit off of the deal. But you could do the same doggone thing. You could separate all your trash into all the separate treasures if you knew just a little bit about basic science and what was worth what, and chemistry. You could sit there and engineer your home to be completely energy efficient, and quite literally use whatever waste products to produce the energy necessary to run your home to begin with. Think about what I'm saying here.
Well, I mean, in my opinion, that would seem really far-fetched until you add in the fact that, like, well, if it is as simple as taking some nichrome wire and, you know, running the right, you know, pulse DC frequency in it, earth ground, and you get a resistive load heat right there, a nichrome wire is enough heat to make a forge.
Yep.
Now, not all forges, not to melt all your metals, but it'll melt a lot of the soft ones for sure.
Yep. And if you understand about different types of gases, you combine some methane to the heat of that nichrome wire, and now you could actually quite literally build a forge that you could blow forced air into and burn even those other types of. Look at the way that the plasma cutter worked, where they actually use air compressor technology to blow through there to give you a smoother weld or a cut. And the same thing in welding, where they're using argon to help to smooth out that weld and cut. These folks have figured this out, and they have been able to do amazing things. It's why we end up having all these cool looking cars and technologies out there. But there are simple ways to understand this, the basics of science and the basics of physics, and once you've got that down, the rest of it's all cakewalk. It's just, I don't know what to say, man. The dream team is the way to go. If you can put a dream team together in your neighborhood, and then your dream team over there is working on a project, and my dream team's over here working on a project, you get stumped by something, so you get on Skype with this video chat, and we're looking in your lab, and you're looking in our lab, and we're sharing this information. Hey, there, see that one deal over there? Fix that, and your gizmo will work.
Well, let's take it to the next level. So, if you have a dream team where you're at, and I have a dream team where I am, Jimmy Bob has a dream team where he's at, and maybe Susie Q wants to start a dream team, and so does Billy Bob, but they're not quite sure yet how to start one, blah, blah, blah. Well, in the world of education, to keep things not necessarily standardized, but to keep things, I consider it, to keep things easy on the teacher, there's training modules.
Yep.
And that basically why you buy textbooks, is because every semester your teacher isn't going to write a new textbook. And actually, the school, they're not going to actually write their own textbooks. They're just going to buy them from a third-party group that sells textbooks to everyone. And then once you got the textbook, Well, there's all the teacher training modules that you get with that textbook if you're the teacher, bunch of tests, all the work that you would need to run a whole semester comes with that book. But if you did that, you know, if you just gave reading assignments and then passed out the homework, just like, you know, maybe you're, that's how they did it in elementary school where I was at, and then we're going to do a test on it, like this whole order of operations. You know, your students get really bored with that, and those tend to be the classes that kind of suck. And it's the classes, well, this teacher has taken the training modules, adapted them a little bit to themselves, then kind of made it a little bit more fun.
Yep.
So that comes to the teacher's hands. But even a good teacher is using those training modules because it's required by the institution most often to have that book. But even if you don't want to use the book as a teacher, you don't really have to. But you're still probably going to be following a similar order that's in that book anyway.
That's right.
And you probably need to find something or another in that book to use the reference anyway. So you can tell the students, you know, they give you required text, but you don't really have to have it. If you could access it online or go to the library and use it a couple days because they keep it on reserve, then, you know, you'd be able to follow this class fine.
If they
and so I think where the lack here is, what you're talking about is like, well, where is the training module so that people can start their groups? Like, how are you going to start a group with basically nothing? And that's what I think needs to happen next. All the people that you're talking about that are the dream team, maybe a super dream team, if people really came together a little bit and started making their designs, like if Russ came up with a couple of training modules, you came up with a couple of training modules, I came up with a couple, and then we compiled them into one book, then we could give that out to folks and be like, look, you want to start your own dream team? Start with these first 12 experiments.
Yep.
Here they are in a form easy to say. Here's your recipe. You know, here's your list of ingredients, and here's your method. Here's how long it takes to bake. You know, here's the temperature, whatever. And then, at that point, then people have the potential to start that club or that dream team because they're like, look, we've got a frame of reference here.
The very first.
The only where to go, I have to give all credit to Patrick Kelly because Patrick Kelly's book is like a beautiful Patrick J. Kelly's conglomeration of free energy devices from 2012. There's so many different editions of it on the internet. It's 2,000 pages.
The very first.
Every device that I've ever heard of is in that book.
The very first.
And that
would
be a great place to start.
The very first training module in order to get any of this started to begin with would be based on the scientific method. It's testable, it's repeatable, it's falsifiable, and so on down the line. So, if you took in the YouTube community alone, we got technology right now that can put a transcript out for any video. And it will put all the words that this person just said in there. Plus, you could actually print out screen captures of the pertinent information that needs to be pointed out. You already got textbooks written just with the videos alone. But using the scientific method, I see something on YouTube, our dream team can test that, and we can find out where the flaws are in that particular video, and in the process of doing that, recording a second video that would say, this is stage two to what we learned from this right here. You see what I mean? So, the next person in line, if they didn't want to watch the first stage, they could go to the second stage and still get the same amount of information, but now actually have the results and the answer to what it was they were looking for. That's the capability we've got right now. It's mind-blowing. Huh?
That's exactly why. I mean, so here's where I stand on that. I agree. So I think a device that takes the pulse of a relay and fills up a capacitor, it's a real good way for people that have a real big problem understanding where energy's coming from. They can either sit and pound their head against the wall for a couple hundred years more, or they can just say, wow, this is working, let's start to make new math for it.
And maybe.
So with that device, it's as simple as a relay, 12-volt relay, a 9-volt battery, a bridge rectifier, and a start capacitor. a 330-volt start capacitor for a motor, like you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And you put the 9-volt battery on that relay, and then you short out. I mean, you don't short out. You jump over from your coil to your common, and you put your negative on your normally closed, and that relay will sit there and vibrate because you've shorted it out. It'll just go, meh. And then over top of that coil that's already in there, there's a big old length of wire in that relay. You put in a bridge rectifier, and you use that coil as your AC.
Yeah.
And then on the DC side of your bridge rectifier, you plug that into a capacitor, a big old start capacitor, and you'll see it fills up real quick with electricity. We've talked about, I don't know how many times a 9-volt battery can fill up a 330-volt start capacitor for an air conditioner and keep firing it off 100 times, 200 times. I never timed it.
It depends on whether it's nickel cadmium, nickel metal hydride, lithium ion, and how much energy you're actually putting back into it while you're actually using it. See, if you had a solar power charger.
This is the idea of the dream team. What you just said, I don't have any conceptualization of that. I just know that this thing makes a big old spark. Yeah. Other people that have some doubts of that could figure out, like, well, what is the amp hours on a battery of a 9-volt, this particular 9-volt? You know, what's its charge? They have all this equipment and stuff, and then you're right. Then, you know, people could start to actually have the answer to that question. Well, this 9-volt battery, this exact one, could run this relay and dump this capacitor 1,000 times in 24 hours.
Yep.
Okay, and so, well, alright, well, what does that mean? Then, you know, so then, well, that's a beautiful experiment for the start of the dream team everywhere. Another idea is with this nickel cadmium wire. If we knew the frequency that it took to get the resistive heat off of the nickel cadmium wire, we could share that with the people, and then people could start recreating that immediately and being like, alright, I got a signal generator, I got a piece of an old kiln here, I got an earth ground, I got a little, what do we use, the fluorescent bulb starter, you know, alright, let's see what we got.
Yeah.
I don't know, I told you about the relay. I know that works because I built it and I've given it to a bunch of people and I sent you the link, or Mark Daylanger has been doing it since 2014. Same exact thing. It's been on YouTube for 5-10 years. You know, between the Imhotep circuit, that's a little different, but all of them are relay pulse chargers. It's the same thing.
Yep.
And they're all very simple. So that's out there. I don't know about the nickel cadmium wire yet. I don't have my signal generator yet, but I would like to duplicate resistive load heating using the DC pulse.
Well, that's...
or any frequency or signal, you know what I'm saying? And then
yep.
If we accomplish that tiny little feat and then show that, then, like, wow, people are working on that with their dream team. Like, I love what Russ is doing. If he can simplify some of his thing down to an experiment that would cost probably less than $200 in copper in the magnet, because I know he's got a big old operation over there, but if we can scale it down a little bit for the dream team, people can start recreating that. I mean,
I would love to go spend time with Russ from RWG Research just to have a chat with him. If I could just sit down with him in real life, I've talked to him on Skype so many times and we were on the same page about a lot of different things, but I'd love to be in a lab setting with him and to run just back ideas back and forth to each other, because in my view,
the guy puts out videos like crazy.
Yeah.
He pumps out a video every two days. I mean, he's a working man, you know.
But there was something in my mind that I wanted to put out there. Doggone it, my brain just stopped. But either way, there's a lot of guys like Russ out there. You know, I obviously can't go where he's at all the time because it's a lot of travel from where I'm at. But I can find a dream team. I can build a dream team in my neighborhood.
Right.
And everybody builds a dream team in their neighborhood. The whole thing is that we've got so much knowledge and technology available to us that if we used it properly, you'd be surprised at what we could do.
Okay, well, I'll speculate with you now. How many people do you think have a dream team already?
Well, like two or three, the Geek Group's guys. Got their dream team.
What's that?
The Geek Group, they have their dream team. The Atmospheric Group, they have their dream team.
I mean to say that are not notarized. They're private dreams. They're dream teams, so it's like two or three X number of dudes, girls, whatever, ladies, folks, everybody gets together, and they're maybe they're making some current. They're operating in some isolation transformer, getting some current, or they're making some resistive load heat, or they've got a couple of different battery chargers they're working on. How many different dream teams do you think are operating today?
I don't know. There's probably a few that I don't know about.
I would speculate that there's over 100.
Yeah.
People that are... when I went to the store, over to the Radio Shack, before they closed the Radio Shack, when I went over there and I would get the parts, I would tell the lady, I'm building the Medini machine. She's like, oh, so many people come in. She's like, I've heard of that before. A guy was just in the other day building it. I was like, you kidding me? And she's like, no. And I was like, see, I don't even know how many are in my own town.
Well, that's where you can get out there and put together, put a poster out there and say, I'm going to be at the library at this particular point in time. And I would like to have a meeting with anybody interested in alternative energy, and you talk to them. There's a guy out there, and I'm trying to find one of his deals, that has a YouTube channel, and I love the way that he does it, because he actually puts diagrams together in such a fashion that anybody could do it. Basically, he prints out a diagram for like the Medini circuit that shows you exactly what the part looks like, and all you got to do is match the part up to the diagram. Deathman, that's his name, on YouTube. But like, if you want to put together a Medini circuit or something like that, he actually makes a printable diagram that you can glue to a piece of board. And all you got to do is set the part down there. It's got the part number on it. You set it down there. You know where to solder the joints, where to hook the wires up. And then he makes it so ridiculously simple, anybody who is not even an electrician or electronics engineer can replicate the circuit to test it. And if people out there are into graphics technology and software technology, you could quite literally design a way in which to teach people about electronics in such a ridiculously easy fashion, such as, if you understand plumbing, then you understand electronics. Like, for example, a regular light switch would be the equivalence of a transistor. It's going to turn the power on and off. And there's actually a little bit more to the transistor than just turning the power on and off, how it actually functions. But that, using plumbing, you could sit there and explain to somebody how this actually happens. You know, like a picture superimposed over a transistor of a light switch, something that everybody uses every single day, would show them that's what that does. Just like when you go and turn the light on, that's what a transistor does. But there's something else to this, the transistor, is that it's like a resistor. It's like a valve, or you will allow a certain amount of pressure, and until it gets to a certain amount of pressure, it won't release the energy through it. So you'd have a pressure valve showing on there. So it's combination pressure valve slash light switch is a simple explanation of a transistor. And the resistor...
They're interesting too, because you can just use them as a pressure valve if you want, and it won't really burn them up. I mean, you can just pump them with more than they need, and they'll just become an oscillator for you.
Yep, that's it.
Which is pretty nice, because that, for somebody that doesn't really understand transistors, if they look up the Enoki, ENOKI circuit, you'll see that you just pump a certain, you look at your rating on your transistor, you make sure you're pumping double into it, and it'll open and close as fast as you can fill it up. It'll hum.
And
when you've got a hum going on because of pressure, you can almost be guaranteed what you got is pretty close to what Tesla was working with the DC pulse.
Yep.
You got a bunch of pressure being snapped and shot out real quick, and that's filling up again.
And anything that can be scaled up can be scaled down. So there's a guy out there they call Slider on YouTube, and he is running little tiny oscillators that only use a half a volt in order to turn an LED on and off. Alright, well, most LEDs are like 1.5 volts to 3 volts LEDs, and you have to put a resistor on there so you don't burn it up with too much power. But nonetheless, it's showing that you could actually use a half a volt in order to do something, produce some light. And there's a lot of systems out there like earth battery technology where people, you know, you get a little galvanic action from two separate metals down in the dirt and you actually got like a half a volt or even more, but you can't get no work done with it because it's not enough current to do anything. But however, if you understood that you could scale a transistor down, which the electronics industry already figured it out, you can scale a transistor down to act as a switch to actually allow surges of energy to go into a capacitor. And so even a tiny little voltage coming from a galvanic action of two different metals in the dirt would have storage capabilities. And so once you've got that energy stored in the capacitor, you can use that doggone transistor technology to, when the voltage and the pressure gets up to a certain deal, it will act as a pressure valve and release that energy into a larger container. And you can step that up one right after another, multiple tiny little circuits that are taking energy right out of the dirt and stepping it up until it pressurizes a larger container, and then be able to use that power to run whatever it is that you want to run. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I see what you're saying, and I feel like, you know, when you talk about the transistor, I mean, if there's folks out there listening that, like, I don't understand. The reason I told about the relays, because I get that. The transistor, to me, is crazy. So, but I understand, like, if there's somebody out there that knows about transistors and knows about timing transistors, and they can get the transistor to make a massive dunk real sharp, 180 degrees out of phase of another transistor, perfect timing, and that's what those things offer, yeah, is that ability. And if you could do that, then you would have basically a perfect sine wave in a way that would create, you know, it would be your motor generator for almost anything. And because of what, like you said the other week, I mean, it's like, well, look at the way that the inverter works. How is it working? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What's making it? It's the same thing. It could be done, I think, is simply with two nice quality transistors.
That relay that you were talking about, if you took the circuit that I just described, as far as pulling, you know, tiny fractions of voltage and multiplying them into circuits that are dumping power into a larger bank, and then say we get up to our larger bank, and then finally it gets pressurized enough to kick on that relay that you got. Once that relay kicks on and that energy is released, you see what's going on there? You just stepped all that voltage up and actually put a really high voltage release through that relay. As that relay, the field expands on it, and then as it collapses, it pushes that energy even farther. So, and plus, depending on how fast you can get this to happen, you could actually determine the output frequency range of those relays to be able to pulse larger coils. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
So all you're doing is letting tiny switches turn on and off and producing energy, dumping it up over the hill and charging larger banks, which then in turn pulse these relays that once they pulse, they send a larger zap through the system all the way up the dang line until you finally get up to these massive transformers that are absorbing this energy as it's being brought up from the ground. And it sounds, you know, far-fetched because nobody's ever took it to that extreme. But if you look at some of these solar lighting systems out there and you actually take apart the circuit of it and see what's going on inside there, or even these little bitty tiny toys that wave as they're in the sun or whatever, and the efficiency of them, the batteries and all that kind of jazz, rechargeable batteries, some of these things will sit out in your yard for years and still work. So,
well, right, and I mean, when you're talking about taking that step up, like, idea and, like, really saying what you said is, in my opinion, that's the missing key, is that, well, and then getting it from the earth. And it's like, like, you know, not to say it can't be done with, like, a reference to ground, like in an aircraft or a car, but we're talking about Earth ground. And then, you know, when, and I think what you're saying is true, and I mean, look at the Don Smith device sometime and then see that, like, well, what if it was as simple as a 2,000-volt transformer to run a microwave, this crazy new technology that's come out. Oh, they're dangerous, don't open them up. And then, you know, like, you got a 2,000-volt transformer, and it's using capacitance between the load. And it's like, well, if you really think about what you just said, it could be as simple as a microwave transformer stepping something up. I mean, now granted, you know, I've done the math on it, and to run a microwave all day long, depending on your microwave, might cost you as much as $30 to $60 a month, depending on your kilowatt hour. But if you're, you know, what you would get from that, if you wanted to, you could take that amount of electricity generated from that transformation with capacitance and probably, in my opinion, run as many isolation transformers as you wanted to off of it.
Yep.
And so that would mean, well, you know, that would be crazy. And then that's why I think Don Smith said, well, look what I figured out with the microwave. You know, I figured out I have these old can transformers. I've got this microwave, and I got this can transformer to resonate. You know, well, it's not a surprise. You got 2,400 volts coming in your can. You know what I'm saying? You got about 2,400 coming out of that microwave. It's like, okay. You know, I can see where he's coming from. Now, then, you know, you can't really sell it, and it's not that big of an efficiency rating on a low. It takes a lot to run that. So what did he do? He figured out a way to use a car battery and an inverter and a neon sign ballast and everything to do the exact same work as that microwave transformer and capacitance. He hit a few capacitors in there because that was the trick the whole time, was having the capacitance run your load and not the transformer, so you didn't stress your windings. And that's why nobody could figure out how it really worked. And, you know, but now everybody knows how it works. You know what I'm saying? You use capacitance, and then, like, so you could use for what you were saying, to get ground from the earth, if you just used a microwave, you could probably resonate your power transformer. Now, that sounds dangerous. Maybe it is dangerous. I'm just saying it's possible.
What if I told you that a spark gap is the equivalence of a transistor? What if I told you that?
Well, that would make sense because you have the switching, and it would make sense because you have the pressure. And
that's
your switching
right.
Would be, I guess, your spacing and your timing, and your pressure would be, I don't know how you would get your pressure from that.
Well, basically, electricity in the atmosphere, there's an equation out there that will tell you how much, I'll just read this one deal. The electric potential gradient of the atmosphere on an ordinary day over flat desert country over the sea as one goes upward from the surface of the ground, electricity potential increases 100 volts per meter. So 100 volts per meter will basically go on up. The higher you get, the more the voltage will go up from 0 to 100 to 200 to 300 volts. All right, now voltage is pressure. And all you need in order to pulse a coil is that voltage to leap across the spark gap through a coil of wire and pulse a secondary, just like the Tesla coil. So you could make a Tesla coil quite literally where you got a 40-foot tower up in the air, and it has that wire that runs straight from the tower down a line and right over to a spark gap. And as soon as the electrical potential reaches a high enough pressure to leap that spark gap, it will pulse the primary, sending a magnetic field wave up the secondary and inducing a current up there at the top. So you can pull energy right out of the air. The atmospheric group's been doing it for a long time. They got four 250-foot towers with wire, with nanocarbon on these wires, and they're pulling a massive amount of energy out of the air, running it down into capacitor banks, and by the time it gets to the other side, they have 9,000 volts that they have access to. Just pulling it out of the air.
Mm-hmm.
And that technology's available. But a spark gap is the equivalence of a transistor. It takes pressure to overcome the atmosphere between the gaps. So you can actually time it out by how far that gap is apart. And so if it's really super close, it's obvious it's going to be able to leap across there faster. Psst, real fast. A little bit farther, you got to build up more energy on that plate before it finally is pressurized enough to leap across that gap. But that process of leaping across that gap, at whatever timing, will determine the frequency range of how many pulses per second is going on in that system to produce whatever frequency range you want. So we have the technology, quite literally, to pull energy right out of the air. And they say there ain't no such thing as free energy. Huh. It is too
well,
bad.
Well, I think it's time to let that go. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah, I know, but it's still mad science. I still gotta say it every now and then.
I get it.
I still gotta say it every now and then because I'm trying to get some common sense out there on the deal. We have all the points. We have all the technology. We have all the knowledge. We don't even have to go out and buy transistors. We can replicate what the spark gap does, and we can actually determine by, you know, sending a high voltage pulse across the spark gap, we can determine the frequency on the other side. So whatever frequency we got on this side, we can change it just by changing the width of that spark gap. We can step it back down by putting the spark gap further away so it takes longer for it to build up that energy to jump across and slowing that wave down. So we can speed it up, we can slow it down, we can contain it, we can store it, we can use it on demand. If we want to build the perfect machines, right now in history, the time to do it is now, and that's by putting together these dream teams. Well, brother, it's been a fascinating show. Did you have a good time?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, you know what? The Mad Science Show, we need more people. We need more people to come to the table and talk about these things and troubleshoot them. But not just talking about them. To build the dream teams in your community, going out and finding those folks that are interested in alternative energy and bringing them together. And, you know, you're going to find incidents where some people believe in this type of energy as opposed to that type of energy, and they think that's the direction they want to go. And you might have to, you know, help them with their project to finally troubleshoot it and get it done, and then throw your idea on the table as well. So the key to making your dream team successful is to somehow or another get everybody to the understanding that we got to put our egos aside if we want to accomplish our ultimate goal to prove what it is that we're wanting to prove. To be able to become energy independent and off the grid, so to speak. Until you get past that one flaw of humanity where your ego won't allow you to look into a different direction, or you keep one foot in the box and one foot out of the box, and you're not willing to think beyond what they say. I've lost friends just because I said I don't care about current, watts, or amps. Because I don't. Because at the stage of research that I'm trying to explain to people, at the point where I'm at, current, watts, and amps aren't what is going on there. It's a timing issue. It's being able to take that energy, speed it up or slow it down to do what I want it to do before I actually store it and then use that energy like you want to explain it. I want to move energy from point A to point B, show people how to move energy from point A to point B without using so much energy input that's not necessary. It doesn't take as much energy to run the things that we run. We need to learn a different way to move that energy. And when people understand that and figure out what it is that I'm trying to explain to them, maybe I don't have the terminology to get my point across. But the way that we're running it right now makes the generator have to work really hard, because we're doing it wrong. If anything is getting hot, then that means you're doing it wrong. When you use energy and it produces a massive amount of waste in the form of heat or friction, any kind of losses in the system, then you're doing it wrong. All you need to know is that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It can be changed, it can be moved, it can be stored, and it can be used in so many different. You're not creating or destroying anything. All you're doing is tapping into what nature has already provided and utilizing it to your advantage. The same applies with the laws of physics. The laws of physics don't have to be a brick wall to free energy. The laws of physics can be a tool that when you want to invoke the lens effect, so that such as I want my my brakes to work off electricity, so I produce an electric motor, and whenever I want that electric motor to stop, I can create a dead short on that motor and induce the lens effect, and now I have electric braking. The train industry figured it out. The trolley industry figured it out. Regenerative braking figured it out. So the technology and the physics applies, and it is provable, and it's testable, and repeatable, and so on down the line. We got everything we need. That's all I'm saying. And if you're out there and you heard this particular podcast or any other podcast that you like, share it on your social media. If you have some sort of inside connection to be able to talk to anybody in the position of power who's interested in anything to do with alternative energy or making things happen, the movers and shakers of the world, the money men or whatever, anybody that you trust that really wants to get something resolved, I would love to talk to anybody on this planet. I'd love to talk to any environmentalist group, anybody that says that there's a problem out there in this world. I'd love to talk to anybody and help them troubleshoot the problem. My deal is, you know, I can sit here and talk, and I can sit here and share all my information, but unless anybody's willing to listen, or unless they're willing to sit down at the table, I'm just doing what I'm doing. But I'm going to keep on doing what I'm doing because I believe in the ultimate dream of making our world a better place. I did my YouTube channel in a creative way in order to try to get minds to open up to possibilities. And I posed the questions, is this possible? And if not, why isn't it possible? Or if it is possible, what would it take to make it so? And by doing that, I was hoping to pull in the dream team. People that thought just like I did. Folks, you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. If you like this information, please share it around. Please pass these podcasts around. Chop them up, whatever you like from the deal, and send out the information. That's what it's all about. So, Ted, you got anything, words of wisdom you want to say real quick?
Thank you, appreciation day to you for getting up every Saturday and making the radio show go on for years. Nice job, thank you.
Well, thank you for being here. As usual, it's always an honor and a pleasure, and you help make the show. So, peace and love to everybody out there listening in. Share this content with somebody. Bring more people to the table. That's what it's all about. We're not trying to sell them anything. We're just trying to get together and put some brilliant minds together. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Out of time, the phone is a train. No excuses, man. Scatter zoom!
game is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.